Yes, it's me, Tony Martin, back from the brink of death to join Tony Wilson once again in one of the two gill-shaped chairs as we say, what have you won tonight? Because, you know, why should footballers and television stars have all the fun? Everybody's won something. We're going to hear what you have won on tonight's show. But that's not all, is it, Tony?
No, we've also got the quiz, as we've had all last week. We've got Pete Dillon.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
just been down to the blue carpet at the Brownlow. It's not red carpet this year, it's blue.
Really?
I think that's just carpet.
That's just carpet.
If it's any colour other than red.
That's right.
But he's back from there. We've also got the etiquette panel.
Good. And Wayne Hope and Robin Butler, creators of The Librarians, are going to be with us. And, yeah, Jane Clifton is here as well. Howard Langmead. It's quite shockers tonight. Everybody is a winner. It's all coming up. Gill side after the news.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Good evening, everybody. I am back. I'm on the meds. Tony, thanks for filling in the other night on Thursday.
Oh, it was an experience to sit there solo, to feel like a proper ABC person for a night.
I was going to try. I could have come in, but my voice was very Neville Ran, as it were.
Could you have played Neville Ran all night?
If we had wanted a three-hour Neville Ran sketch, that would have been fine. But no, I've been doing the vocal warm-ups all day. A little old lady was mutilated late last night. That's a good one to try at home.
Could you have done Gus Mercurio all night?
Gus Mercurio, the big rancher.
70 grand.
Little Louie. I would have been happy to. Would have been happy to play Gus Mercurio for a whole show. What are we doing tonight? Well, Wayne Hope and Robin Butler are going to be dropping by. The Librarians is, I think it's only just gone off the air, but it's already coming out on DVD. The window gets shorter all the time. Don't know if you've noticed. Pete Dillon is here. He's dolled up. Is that?
Yes, he's just coming back from the blue carpet. We mentioned that the Brownlow, for some inexplicable reason this year, is running with blue carpet.
Right.
And not red.
Yeah.
And Pete's been down there interviewing the major chances in this year's Brownlow medal.
Okay.
And observing the fashions.
Now, see, this is the point I want to make. You know, everyone's a winner on tonight's show. You know, it's not just footballers up for prizes. It's not just international television stars on the Emmys. We're saying, what have you won? We want to hear from you. If you've won anything at all.
From the sublime to the small.
To the insignificant.
I won two consecutive meat trays at the Preston Football Club.
Wow,
where
really?
My, you imagine how full a freezer gets when it's just been meat trayed the previous weekend and it's getting meat trayed again. Unfortunately, I think I used up a lot of my raffle luck in those two meat trays. And
oh, so this was just luck. It was just luck of the draw. There was no skill
it was just
required.
A number. But I guess we probably would prefer where it's not just a raffle, you won.
Yeah.
Be good if there's some skill, some latent skill. I won an arm wrestling trophy in Brescia,
really?
Italy. I went over there as part of the race around the world in 1998.
Which, of course, you won.
I did win that.
Right, so that's
but
one.
Off to the side, I was actually trying to do a story about Italian Wheel of Fortune, Ruota della Fortuna. I won't win any pronunciation competitions there, but while I was trying to arrange for the permissions to film Ruota della Fortuna, I dashed off sideways and participated in the European Arm Wrestling Championships in Brescia. And I, at the end of the tournament, I actually got smashed in every heat I was in. In fact, one guy from the Ukraine said I was the weakest competitor he'd come across in 11 years
really?
On the tour.
But you're fairly
muscly. These guys.
Really?
They were just like they were like sows lying down. they were enormous, and so I basically. But at the end, they said, now every country that was represented at this tournament, if you is going to receive an award. And as I was the only Australian, I was handed over a beautiful bronzed arm wrestling trophy, two arms interlinked.
Even though you hadn't really.
Well, I'd lost every heat I'd been in. But it's probably the best trophy I've ever received.
Wow. Okay, someone, John Standish, our producer, has written down, maybe you've won Derek's quiz. I mean, the bar is pretty low,
that's
really.
True.
If we're not going to accept that, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
I won a $49.95 AG for Film Splicer. I've mentioned this story many times before, by wagging school for a couple of weeks to make a film a Super 8 film when I was 14 and entering the New Zealand television station TV2, sensibly named TV2, film after school filmmaking competition, got to go on TV, shake hands with Richard Wilkins.
So
then known as Richard Wilde.
What sort of film?
It was a sequel to Batman called Batman Again.
Before Batman Again? Oh, no, we haven't had Batman Again yet.
Well, no, there was Batman in the 60s. So yeah. I did a sequel to that called Batman Again. I thought Batman Again was a pretty good name for a Batman sequel. I don't know why they haven't gone with that.
And how long? What was the feel of the film?
It was 7.5 minutes. The feel of it was... it was when we discovered that everyone in the film had to be someone from the school. And because it was a boys' school, we decided to go with comedy because the whole Catwoman thing wasn't going to pan out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was, that was pretty exciting. And the school got, like, a giant projector and all this filmmaking equipment. I got, like, a $49.95 splice. I wasn't very happy. Sure, I'd illegally not attended school for 2 weeks in order to win or come third. I think the film that won was a film about a runaway skateboard and a cat. My mother said I should have had a cat in the film. She wanted the whole film to just be about our cat.
I did just read about this story in Nest of Occasionals, which I think is coming out next week or the week after your book. You did say that there was one shot, however, that was probably the clinching shot.
And it was the only good joke in the film was because in Batman, the TV show, there was always a bit where they walked up the wall.
Yeah, I remember. So and there were often quite long conversations between Robin and Batman as they were wall side.
And then towards the end of the series, a window would open and a celebrity would stick their head out like laughing. You know, Sid Caesar would happen to be just in the building they were climbing up. Yeah, well, because we did the same thing of turning the camera on its side and then the bad guys ran past and dropped their bag of money, so the bag of money went sideways onto the wall.
That's against the wall.
The only good joke. And that's the bit that they showed on television. And they showed that and then cut to Richard Wilkins pretending to find it hilarious.
And was Richard Wilkins warm?
I can't remember because... It was sort of, even in those days, it was quite daggy to be seen on television with Richard Wilkins.
And have you got either the footage of Wilkins?
No.
Or the Batman film?
I have the film. I found it on the weekend.
So are you going to YouTube it? YouTube on the ABC. You'd put it on one of any of the many
that would
video
be
sharing.
It would be insane to specifically target one video sharing opportunity.
No.
Maybe I will. If I can ever work out how you would do that, I might have a crack at that. But that's almost impressive. We can go, I think, a lot lower than that.
25 word or less comps?
That will accept pretty much anything. 1-300-222-774. We're going to play a track, though, before we go to any callers. And we've been talking about Derek Gill's music career, obviously. Have we worked out what his band is called at this stage?
The Ugly Uncles.
The Ugly Uncles. You might see them playing around town. I've been doing some research. Quite a talented family, the Gills. You've got Mika Gill, Derek's niece. She opens the suitcases on Deal or No Deal, which I'm going to call Gill or No Gill from now on. In fact, I think that would be a good name for the show, Gill or No Gill.
Well, that is a perfect name, isn't it, for the substitute Gills?
And then you've got Jess Gill, Derek's daughter, who has a band called Flap, with an exclamation mark. And they've got a self-titled album called Flap. Well, obviously, it's self-titled.
Although it hasn't got the exclamation mark.
I'm not sure. Derek's big brother, Dan, plays funk bass in a band called Ethanol. But I've dug out the Flap album, and apparently... I hope Derek won't mind me mentioning this on air. His daughter, Jess, did actually fall off a cliff.
When she was 19?
Literally fell off a cliff, like 9 metres.
Lemming style.
And what do you do when that happens? You write a song about it. So here is Flap with Down, Down, Down.
Thank you.
Down, Down, Down. That is Flap featuring Derek Gill's daughter Jess on lead vocals there. And you can find out more about the Flap sound at myspace.com/WeFlapOn. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Derek tonight on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria, where everybody is a winner. Isn't that right tonight, Tony?
Well, we've got a full board of winners.
Yeah.
We've asked the question, what have you won? 1-300-222-774. And Joe in South Morang, what have you won?
Yeah, fellas, what I won is in 1979, Grace Brothers, in conjunction with the TV show Sounds Unlimited, the one that was hosted by Donnie Sutherland,
yes,
were giving gold records away. If you could guess how many copies of these different albums that Grace Brothers would sell this 9-week period,
right,
and I guess correctly for a Dire Straits gold record.
Wow. And so you, Dire Straits, that was your choice? You decided to guess how many Dire Straits album they'd sell?
Yeah, well, I actually picked a couple of others, but Dire Straits was the main one I was going for because they pretty much became my favourite band of all time.
Wow. And did you get to go on and meet Donnie Sutherland?
Yes, Donnie Sutherland actually presented it to us, and my brother's godsister actually won a David Bowie gold record.
Fantastic.
So there was 30 of them given away, and we managed to snare one each, and we went to the Siebel Townhouse in Sydney, and Donnie Sutherland and all his crew were there giving it away, and it was put on Sound Unlimited on the next Saturday morning.
Yes,
good stuff, Joe.
And it's sad to think that the Siebel Townhouse has since been knocked to the ground by the Wreckers Ball, as has Donnie Sutherland, I think, as well. I think you'll find. Thank you, Joe, a winner tonight. It's Emmy night. It's Brownlow night. Everyone on this show is a winner. Ryan from Footscray, what have you won?
Well, you might have heard of the Encouragement Award, but I've got one better than that. In 1992, I won the Most Enthusiastic Award at the South Bowen Vic Kick.
Wow. So there's sometimes these trophies are very unkindly referred to as fat kids trophies. And would you say Most Enthusiastic is in that category?
Well, I think that would be an appropriate term for me at that time of my life. But I did ask my father, because I didn't actually know what enthusiastic meant. I was only 7 at the time. I said, what's enthusiastic? Does that mean you're a good footballer? He said, it probably means you'll be good at theatre, but not so much football.
And have you kicked on in the theatre game?
Well, I have actually kicked on in the theatre game, but not so much football.
Well, Most Enthusiastic is a great category, and congratulations to the Vic Kick organisers who came up with it.
I still have the trophy, and it still sits proudly upon my chest of drawers at home.
Brian, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Craig from Melton, what have you won?
G'day, Tony and Tony.
Hello, Craig.
I've got two. I'll go with the more impressive one first.
Yeah.
I was on Cash Cab on, dare I say, Channel V.
Right.
On pay TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and didn't do too bad on it either.
So is that like a quiz game show?
It is. Basically, you got about a 15-minute cab ride, and they ask questions. You're allowed to get two wrong. If you get a third one wrong, you're out of the cab and you get nothing.
And so, hang on. Okay, so this is a competition where you're in a cab.
Yes, it's basically, you know, you're told beforehand, like, someone came up to me at a trivia night and actually said, look, we're recruiting people for this show. Would you like to be on it? And I go, yeah, all right, I'll give it a shot. And,
you're absolutely sure this went to air?
Oh, yes. So it was recorded 2.5 years ago, and someone just came up and said, oh, it was replayed again on V the other night. So
replayed? Well, and so
it's been replayed about 30 times at least.
What question? Give us one question you were asked on Cash Cab.
Okay. One of them was name the 5 members of the Beach Boys.
Oh, I'd only get Brian Wilson. Can you get any others?
It was Dennis Wilson, wasn't it?
There was other Wilsons.
Yes, Dennis, Carl.
Harold Wilson, I think, was in for a while.
The British Prime Minister.
Yeah, he would. He's usually cropped out of the photographs. I think you'll find. And where did you get ejected from the cab, Craig?
I got to the end, finished up with, $1,400 and a digital camera.
Fantastic.
Good work.
Out of it.
And what was the second one?
The other one was on Triple R.
Right.
The very first time that Tony on the Breakfast has had a call in for shit siblings.
Oh.
I was the first caller.
Obviously, that segment would be retitled if it was being...
Shoddy Siblings,
we call it. Shoddy Siblings, we'll call it. And mine, God knows what made me think of it, but Lee Matthews and Kelvin Matthews. It'll mean nothing to Mr. Martin, but plenty to Mr. Wilson.
Yes, some great brothers who didn't quite live up to their famous... fraternal link. Daryl's Schimmelbush is another. They will rattle off, and Tony's already looking at me blankly, but thank you very much for your call, Craig. That was
thank you, Craig. I must say I do like the word Schimmelbush. Thank you. The number to call is 1-300-222-774. Just quickly, a couple of text messages there, Tony.
Yes, hi, TNT.
That's us.
I won a camera at school in a colouring comp. I was the king of the kids for a while. Cheers, Gav. And this one's from Scott. Won 20 cents in a colouring comp a million years ago and bought a dim sim at a milk bar.
Yes, isn't it a pity to think that colouring competitions are not really broadcast on pay TV? Maybe they are. Maybe there's a whole channel we don't know about. Del from Wodonga, what have you won?
Oh, hi, guys.
Hello.
I actually won a holiday, and I think I've probably gone a little bit too over the top with this, listening to what the other guys have won. But I won it on the internet, and it wasn't actually so much what I won. It was my reaction to it and what happened when I did win it.
Yes, what happened?
What happened?
Well, because I entered it on the internet, I thought it was a hoax, and I didn't believe it. So I actually got the lady's name and number and said, yeah, sure, I'll call you back, you know. So it took me a day or so before I called her back, but it was actually fair dinkum, and I got an awesome holiday out of it. So.
Wow, where'd you get to?
We went to Cairns, North Queensland.
I thought you were going to say Albury.
No. It was Cairns, and it was all 5-star, and when we got there, they upgraded us, and
wow.
It was, everything was just like... You know, just awesome.
This sounds like one of those, like, we've all been taught not to enter any of these things because you'll be spammed and annoyed for the rest of time. And then your story is just coming over the top and undoing all those good lessons, saying, chase the holiday.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we'd had a bit of vandalism, and so I thought it was just sort of like somebody having a bit of a joke with me and saying, you know, oh, we'll ring you up and cheer you up sort of thing. But it was, yeah, it was fair dinkum, and it was... best thing I've ever won.
Well, that's great. Fantastic, Del. Your Wodonga dream come true. Jenny from Warragul also is a winner. What did you win, Jenny?
Hello, Mr. Martin and Mr. Wilson.
Hello.
Hi.
When I was around about 12, I'll take it back, my family and I went to Caloundra, you know, southern Queensland, and we must have gone to a fair or something that was happening that particular night. And anyway, I went on the swimming, the wheel that, you know, turns around and around. Mum and Dad must have let me do it. And anyway, I had the ticket number 8 in my hand, and sure enough, 8 came up, and I ended up winning a beauty box. And ever since then, which is about 40 years later, 8 has been my favourite number of all time.
And what exactly is a beauty box? Is that makeup?
It's one of those makeup things. I don't actually use makeup myself, so it's most inappropriate for me personally, but nevertheless, it's a magnificent thought in my mind that I actually ever won something.
That is a lovely story, Jenny, from Warragul. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. We have, I'm hoping not to pronounce this name incorrectly, is it Lineal from Williamstown?
You got it, Tony.
Which did I get?
Lineal from Williamstown. Hi, both Tony.
Hello.
Hi.
What did you win?
My best thing was when I was in Standard 5, which is about grade 6 of primary school in South Africa, I won third place in a high jump competition. There were only 3 of us. My best friend who lived next door was the school athletics champ. She won everything, and her dad built her a high jump that we could practice in her backyard, and I think I might have cleared 2 of them and then got knocked out. And it was the best thing, because I was the kid who always went in the egg and spoon race and the sack race, because I was really feeble and pathetic at athletics. So.
Now, Lineal, can you tell me whether you did the scissors kick or did you do the Fosbury flop?
The old scissors kick.
Fosbury flop is one of the great names. You like Schimmelbush, Tone. You must love the name Dick Fosbury, don't you?
I do now. Hang on, so you were 3rd out of 3.
3rd out of 3, and I've still got the certificate. It's my great achievement in sport.
And why were there so few entrants?
I think girls at that age kind of don't think it's very cool to go into athletics or... Anyway, but even better than that is my husband won a trophy for a church cricket competition when he was younger for a hat-trick, and my son, who's into cricket, found it a few years ago, and he was absolutely astonished because it was... I forget the name of the club my husband played for, but it was against St Anne's, and it had whatever the initials were for his club versus SA. And my son, did you play interstate cricket? And he said, no, you know, it was St Anne's, it was the Baptist church of some sort or the other. He said, you got a hat-trick, that's fantastic. He said, maybe.
I don't think he wants the videotape release. Is no, that your feeling, Daniel?
Stepped back onto his wickets when he went to hit the ball. So he was given out. He said the second fella clearly didn't hit the ball, and the wicketkeeper appealed, and so did he, and he was given out. And the third fella, you know, he said he came out and he virtually had a club foot, and he was wearing glasses that were about the size of the... And he managed to actually bowl him out. And he said the umpire very seriously walked over and shook his hand, and they gave him... They mounted the ball and gave him the trophy.
Wow. What is up the runt of the litter. Well done.
Well, Lydia, that's quite a sporting family you've got there.
Almost.
Thank you very much for calling. Right. Justin from Whittlesea. Good evening. What have you won?
G'day, guys. How are you going?
You're not bad. Won anything good?
Yes. I'm on the 3AW rumour file. Am I allowed
to say that? I'm not sure.
I had a rumour of the week, and I won the prize, and the prize was some frozen soup, which was delivered to my home in a styrofoam box with dry ice in it to keep it cool.
Wow.
Fantastic. And do you mind if we ask what was the rumour that you floated?
So long as it's not defamatory.
Yeah, as long as it's not Justin. The producer's
not defamatory. My father-in-law was a cleaner at a bank, and when he was emptying the rubbish bins, he found $34,000 of cash in one of the bins, and he handed it back in, and he got a certificate and a bunch of flowers for his trouble.
A winner
and,
himself.
I offered that as a rumour to try and shame the bank a little bit. And they saw fit to reward me with some soup.
Justin, thank you for contributing.
This is the sort of glamorous story we want to hear on Emmy / Brownlow night. Thank you very much. We are going to get to news headlines in a moment, but first I want to hear what Hamish has got to say. He's on the Hume. What did you win way back in 1974?
Oh, well, this, you know, out-glamours the whole lot, I think.
Yeah.
I won two tickets to the Horse of the Year show.
Wow.
In London.
Fantastic. And who was the Horse of the Year that year?
I didn't go.
You didn't go? You turned him down?
I was 8 years old. I really didn't want to win two tickets to the Horse of the Year show. I wanted to win, like, chocolate or something like that.
So how did you win it?
You'll like this. I correctly guessed how many horse intestinal worms there were in a jar.
Wow, that is a twisted take on the jelly bean idea.
What show was offering that as a competition?
I think it was like the local ploughing show.
Right, so they've had a meeting.
A bit of a carrot cruncher.
They've gone, where can we get intestinal worms for starters? Somebody would have.
They purged a pony.
And then they would have had to count them. That's an exciting meeting.
Unless there were like three. Unless it wasn't that hard to guess.
Well, it was like 230-something.
Oh, I love the fact you remember.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much, Hamish. Listen,
don't worry.
We've got news headlines. Can you sign in, please, Jim Graham?
Here I am.
Good on you, Jim. Take it away.
I've got beeps, too.
Oh, well, we've got it all on this program.
Oh, I tell you what, it's colourful.
Bells and whistles.
Tony and Tony, thank you.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne. And ABC Victoria.
That's right, the show we like to call Giel or No Giel. Tonight it's No Giel, two Tonys in the chair, and just one caller we must get to, Dennis from Mont Albert. Thanks for waiting. What did you win, sir?
G'day, guys. How's it going?
Good.
That's good. I was about 8 or 9 years old. I entered a competition on the Agro's Cardone Connection.
Yeah.
You remember that old show?
Yes. I sure do.
And, it was like one of those games where you had the pirate ship and you had a little bloke and he had to go to each different number
ship.
And got to number 8 and won a board game.
Fantastic.
Which was a bit of a let down. But
do you remember what it was called, the board game?
Yeah, it was called Xenity. It was like a million-dollar version of Monopoly.
Yeah,
but then instead of buying streets, you're buying properties like Qantas and stuff like that.
Do you remember a game called Pol Economy? No? This was probably Xenity's big competitor. I loved Pol Economy as a kid.
But tell me, did you get abused by aggro for your trouble?
No, thankfully. I spoke to, it was a while ago now, thinking back to the 80s.
Jamie Dunn, I think, was the man who had his hand up aggro's back passage.
I think you might be right. But I spoke to some dude who was just putting on a pirate accent or something. I can't really recall his name, but
that bloke.
Yeah, that was my claim to fame.
All right. Well, thanks for sitting in there, Dennis. Thank you for waiting.
Cheers.
And now it's great fun to welcome our star guests for this half hour. Wayne Hope and Robin Butler, will you sign in, please?
Good evening.
Hello, Tony.
Hello, thanks, Robin Wayne.
Now, you've won stuff recently, haven't you? Wayne, you won, I think, an acting award for Stupid, Stupid Man, did you not?
I did. I did win an Astra.
I wish it was the car. I wish it gave us a second car. That would be great.
I've been wondering about the Astras because since they no longer, I don't think they sell an Astra anymore. So what do they become next year?
It means you can now mention them on the ABC. It's very handy.
It's true. That is handy. Once a car becomes fictionalised,
yeah, it's fine.
It's able to be mentioned. And did you make a controversial speech? Did you get up and...
I did. I thought it was fun. But as often the case with my humour, it was not read as fun, it was read as offensive.
Oh, really?
And, I was celebrating, it was the Pay TV Awards, and they made the free-to-air awards, the Logies, look like a top entertaining night, frankly. They were appalling, and everyone knew they were appalling. We're all sitting there, you know, that's the ridiculous irony of it all. You sit there, you know, going, this is terrible. And I was the third last award, so I've been waiting for 4 hours, I think. And they have awards for, like, you know, best 15-second promo. And there's 600 entries or something. You
best,
know.
Best competition based around a cab trip, basically, based on what we heard earlier.
Don't they have, like, best brand and best...
Best brand, best franchise.
Oh, dear, best synergy.
Most audience penetration.
Best monetarisation of concept. It's here.
Also in Tony's book, the Nest of Occasionals, you were involved in a ad writing awards night, weren't you?
I got into a lot of trouble at the glamorous Goldie Awards up in Brisbane. Hello to anyone listening from Queensland. I was 21 years old. I'd never been to a casino. I'd never had a free drink. I got very drunk and I abused some people from the podium and was told I would never work again in Queensland. That's the short version. It was a lot more complicated than that, though. There was a lot of trouble. But it's been exaggerated over the years, that story, to the point where...
you can never work in Queensland again.
That's right. Well, radio announcer Mark Irvine came back from Queensland 1 year and said, "What did you get up to at the 85 Goldies? I heard you punched out Billy J. Smith." I didn't punch out Billy J. Smith.
I've never
punched anybody. And if I had, wouldn't that have made the news? Wouldn't there have been a picture of him on the front of the Courier Mail falling into the orchestra pit with the headline, "He's fallen over"?
You would have thought. Like that Walkley Awards when Stephen Mayne hit the dirt.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was great telling. I'd like to see more of that. But look, enough about that. The Librarians, congratulations on a fantastic second series, guys.
Thanks, Tone.
Wound up a couple of weeks ago, but already coming out on DVD about a week from now. Is the window closing? Is that because people pirate things so quickly? You have to get them out on DVD?
I hope so. I'm stop downloading illegally, everybody.
There's a lot of it about,
don't
isn't there?
Download other people's work if you have to. But don't download it.
I use it as a way of sampling something that I will actually go and... Because I feel quite guilty.
Stop it,
so I then go and buy the proper version on DVD myself.
Yes, that's fine. And, Tony, you're allowed to do anything you want because you are the greatest advocate of everybody's work in the universe. You bring, you know, work from Moldova.
Well, yes,
to people in Belgrave.
Moldovan television isn't really getting the platform it needs in Belgrave. That's, I've said that for a long time. But I find that if I hear about a good comedy show or something,
yeah,
I'll go on to one of the, we're not allowed to mention it. A site that has the word tube in it, I'll have a look at a bit of it, and if it's any good, I then will buy the DVD. So I would never have bought the DVD if I hadn't sampled
absolutely
a bit of it illegally.
I'm fully condoning that sort of activity. But when you think, I'm not going to buy that series because I can just get download it, and you're big supporters of television. The people who do that are big supporters of television, and I just don't think you make the connection that somebody is.
I'll stop downloading illegally.
Well, how big does the warning? I think the bit warning can get bigger at the start with video piracy as a crime. At the moment, they're only using sort of 58 point text, aren't they?
I have to say that the few DVDs I've been involved in, I've always demanded that you be, although I support the copyright warning, I think you should be allowed to skip past it.
If
you've already bought it and you're watching it for the 10th time, you should be able to skip past the copyright warning. See, we tackle the big issues. Does Derek Gill have the guts to tackle an issue like that? I don't think he does.
I don't think. That's no Gill.
What is on the the Librarians DVD in the way of bonuses and extras and Easter eggs?
I don't know. Have we got a Tony Martin Easter egg special?
I love
on
Easter eggs.
We don't do... Easter eggs aren't that big anymore.
Have people got over them? Like, commentary tracks are becoming a bit passe now, aren't they?
So you should explain what an Easter egg is.
An Easter egg is a hidden feature where you might just be moving your menu around and then suddenly an icon will come on by accident then you click enter and there might be a deleted scene or a secret interview. And I was involved in a DVD available through ABC shops, Barjas / The Olden Days, where our ambition was to have more hidden content than actual content. So there's hours and hours, I think something like 21 Easter eggs.
Like Barjas himself.
That's right. Well, he's got a lot of content, that bloke. But I don't think we achieved that. I think there was over an hour of hidden content. But what have you gone for, sort of? Because I know you guys were involved in Very Small Business, and that had a fantastic DVD.
We do like to... we write specific content that we shoot for the DVD, because we think, you know, if you're on board and you've seen it and you're buying the DVD, then there should be treats aplenty for your commitment. So this time round, we wrote a few extra things. Robin wrote a few extra... there was an episode where Christine, the character Christine, gave birth, the fifth episode.
Yes, a very, very... great one to hear from the next room, I have to say. I was watching that episode. People were in the next room, thought somebody was actually giving birth. And came in.
Our poor editor, Chris Brannigan, he gave birth, I think, for about 22 days. He was cutting that. And I think Gardening Australia next door yelled at one point, which they never do. They're just lovely and
keeping
quiet.
Keeping the chrysanthemums up.
When's she going to give birth? Was yelled from the edit suite next door. So there are extra... The antenatal classes, which Christine did with the midwife, played by Noni Hazelhurst.
They're great. We've done...
Wrote a few extra antenatal classes that you didn't see in the series but thought would be a nice place to visit. And
we did a making of, you know, there's pretty extensive making of and bloopers and stuff. It's really interesting because, you know, we've got a 14-year-old and watching what our 14-year-old does when she gets a DVD after she's watched the said program 450 billion times.
Right.
Then, you know, she likes, it's bloopers. First up.
Bloopers, yeah.
Bloopers
people love
first
them.
Up, yep. And then the making of. And then, so, you know, we're trying to put a bit of, you know, something for everybody in there, and you want bang for your buck. You really want bang for your buck.
Now, I mentioned Very Small Business. You guys produced that, and Wayne, well, I think both of you co-wrote the script with Gary McCaffrey.
Yes.
No second series of that pending? I was a big fan of Very Small Business.
Were you?
Yeah, I was.
So was Craig from Cheltenham, who's texted here. Hi, Wayne and Robin. Is there another series of Very Small Business in the pipeline?
You know, we've left Don Angel hanging, I feel.
Literally sitting there. No, there isn't for the time, at this point in time. The ABC have said...
But nothing really. just been a long, awkward pause. Quite similar to the series. So you
come into the meetings and say, "Is there going to be another series of very small business?" And they just don't reply.
There's just a very long, awkward pause.
People go to get cups of tea and never come back.
And the meetings are in Sydney, so they end because we've got a plane to catch back to Melbourne. And so we've had three of those now.
Right.
We won't take it as a no.
No.
It's not a no. It's just...
Because I was a big fan. I actually worked on the pilot for... I was one of the camera people, I don't know if you remember, Wayne, back in 2004. It was some of my favourite work that I've done.
Tony was brilliant. He was camera B and he shot the series because we made the pilot ourselves, which we often do. We just road test our ideas and cut them at home and see how they go. And Tony came and was camera B. And my distinct memory of that is having never seen anybody able to do an anecdote to someone else on set. Tony would hold the camera, his focus, get his shot, know his movement, keep talking about an anecdote from Auckland back in 1984.
Oh, no. Talk
non-stop. The first AD, who knew you very, very well, knew to not even ask for silence, just go, "Stand by, rolling." Tony would be going, and then this guy came up, brown cords he had, right? And it would go all the way up, and then action, it'd just be dead silent. And then we'd play the scene out, and then cut, cords that came not down to his ankle, but right up to...
Not at all distracting for the actors.
Oh, no, nothing. No. So help me focus, really. Well, took all the nerves out
Kim
of it.
Kim Gingell was encouraging me down that path. That's who I'm going to blame. But that was a great show, and it was based... Was it based kind of on something that had happened to Gary McCaffrey, where he worked for a guy who had seven or eight different false identities?
There were several identities, yes, that we lifted that idea, I think, from that his first, one of his first writing gigs was writing for a shonky publication.
Publisher.
Shonky publisher, who had a couple of phones on his desk and would answer with different names, and we loved that. So it was kind of a combination of that, and then my family ran a very small business for many, many years.
A small business.
No, very small business, I'd like to say. It was big in their mind. But.
We have a couple of... I don't know if you want to meet some of our listeners, Wayne and Robin. We have some winners on the line.
Yes.
Mari from Lamoroo, South Australia. Are you a winner?
Oh, yes, I was. I was about 11 years old, which is 64 years ago. My father and I were listening to the test cricket over in England on the radio, and they wanted people to send in sayings about Bradman. You had the name, you know, all the initials of the name. So I sent in braised rabbits and devil mushrooms are nice. And I won a small shirt.
Small shirt. Fantastic.
What was that? It's fantastic you still remember the exact wording.
I mean, it was something that I was very proud of.
And are you wearing that shirt now?
No. Goodness me, that's 64 years ago.
64 years ago. Well, thanks, Mari. We have John from Ballarat who won something in 1958. And 58, have I got that wrong, John?
58's right. No, it's good.
What did you win?
A dozen pies.
And do you still have those pies today, John?
No, I had one of them on the way home and I nearly... Well, it nearly killed me because it was cold.
And what did
and
you...
I was in a... there was a radio contest in Melbourne for Collingwood supporters to turn up for a radio show. So we went to the Parramatta Town Hall. There was 1,000 people there, I reckon. And they just had all these kids on stage and nobody knew what to do. So they said, "Who's Captain of Collingwood?" And everyone's called Murray Williams. So they said, 1,000 people went that way. You're all out. And then I had asked another question. I said, "You're in, you're out." And I ended up on the side with six kids. And we were on 3UZ. And I can't remember the fellow's name, but he was a pretty famous fellow anyway. We had to sit there for 5 weeks. We all sat in a line in chairs. Somebody was full back, somebody was centre back.
Wow.
And I answered, I had one question. They said, "Who kicked the first goal in the Collingwood St Kilda game last week?" And I happened to have been there, and I said, "Billy Young."
I thought it was Billy Young.
But look, he won a Coleman medal, Billy.
I think he just got two votes in the Brownlow a couple of minutes ago.
Anyway, I never answered another question for the entire series, and there was a kid called Peter McCluskey. I've never met him before, or I've never seen him since, but he answered every question.
Oh, that McCluskey. Damn you, McCluskey.
Turns out my mum knew him.
Oh, well, thank you, John.
And we won a dozen pies and some cash. It might have been 5 quid or 10 quid. I can't remember, but I had a pie on the way home. It was cold and I was crook.
Never mind, John.
And just quickly, who are you tipping for tonight for the Brownlow?
D Swan.
Is that someone?
Dame Swan, yeah. You'd be impressed with the stickers down one of his arms. Very, a fulsome tattoo array. And as
my grandfather played 53 games for Collingwood from 1907. So there's no doubt about where that's going. And Geelong for the flag.
All right. Well, thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, mate.
This is 774 with Tony Martin and Tony Wilson, Wayne Hope and Robin Butler sitting in. We'll be back with them in a moment. But first, here's a track I was talking about the other night, You and I, Open All Night, a track they didn't put on one of their albums. They gave it away to the soundtrack album for Better Than Sex. And it's a beauty. Here it is, Open All Night.
Leave the light on, we're open all night.
That's You and I, Open All Night. On 774 Melbourne and ABC Victoria, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson in the Gill-shaped chairs. What have you got there? A bulletin, Tony?
I have something that should almost be accompanied by big whooping sirens because it's a severe thunderstorm warning for damaging wind, hailstones and flash flooding for people in the Mallee and parts of Northern Country and Wimmera areas.
Right, damaging, you say?
Yes, it was issued at 7:09 tonight, and it's expected that Mildura, Swan Hill, Walpiup, Warwick Nabil, Echuca and Kerrang could all be affected. And I think they're places that are crying out for the melted form of large hailstones, but they probably aren't that keen on flash flooding.
No.
So it seems as though it doesn't rain, it pours, it is about to apply, Tone. Keep clear of fallen power lines, secure any loose objects in the vicinity of your home, keep away from creeks and drains, do not drive vehicles through flooded areas, stay indoors if possible, avoid using the phone during the storm, and if you are outside, avoid sheltering under large trees.
And no bad language either while you're about it. We'll keep in touch with the Bureau as the evening progresses. We have a very good relationship with the Bureau on this program.
And we'd like to hear your tales of destruction too.
Sure.
We are, if nothing else, a tabloid weather station. And so if you want to call us, it's 1-300-222-774. Text on 1-9-774-774.
Wayne Hope and Robin Butler, creators of fine quality Australian television, are with us. The Librarians, a very small business, just two of the shows they've produced through the company Gristmill, I think. Is that when you see the word Gristmill, that's you guys,
that
isn't it?
That is us. That is grist to the mill.
That's right. What is on the drawing boards down at Gristmill at the moment?
Well, we have a couple of projects on the slate, I think the technical term is.
It's a shed, isn't it? Let's be honest, it's a shed. I've been to your place.
It's a shed. It's a shed. Well, sometimes we call it a pod if we want to sound a little bit Jetsons, but it's a shed, essentially.
It's not really a slate. It's just that, you know, the blackboard paint you can buy.
Right.
It's just that painted on the side.
And there's not really enough room in the shed. We're kind of annoying each other, I think, at the moment, sitting on top of each other a little.
We are.
I mean, that can be fun, but when you're trying to work.
We're typing side by side different projects at the moment, but we both like to talk out loud, you know, when you're working on something you like to give voice to the characters, and but we're a bit timid to do that because we
you keep your idea until it's ready to be.
Mm. So the dog gets walked a lot.
So one of us does a lap.
Always one of us is out.
As so many sentences on the ABC begin, some would suggest that it's maybe a foolish move for a married couple to work so closely together on everything and then play a married couple in The Librarians.
Mm.
Some would say, some I think you'd say. Suggest, allegedly.
Yes. But then it's not.
It's going all right, though, isn't
it? It's going all right. You know, it's going well. And, you know, we have a yell every now and again. And
drunkenly cut his hair?
Yeah.
No.
Now and again.
Now and again. It's growing back, Tony. You know, let up. No, it's all good.
That's not. And a guy at a ridiculously large hardware franchise stood behind us the other day and we were getting some seedlings and he was big burly trades bloke and just leant over the back shoulder and went, glad she let you grow your hair back, mate. And I'm so delighted that the Librarians fans were...
That's our demographic. Big burly blokes at large hardware franchises.
Now, I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this, but a few months ago you were heading off to the US on some grist mill business. Is that something I shouldn't bring up on air? Is there? I mean, there's been talk in the papers of your shows being adapted to America.
Yes.
Can it be done?
Can it be done?
Who would have that hair?
Yeah, who would have the hair?
David Caruso, perhaps, says Terry.
Michael Bolton. It could be done. We're just sort of seeing how we go at the moment with our shows. The great thing about having sort of your shows on air here is that people overseas illegally download them and see them and then go, gee, we like you guys. Come over and talk to us about stuff.
Did you get to go to any meetings with anyone like Ari from Entourage?
Our agent is the agent that Ari is based on.
Really? Is his name Ari?
Ari, yeah.
Is that Ari? I've seen him on television, this guy. Is he like Ari?
Well,
we haven't gone that high.
At the agency, there's like, you know, 150 agencies.
Mm. Levels to get through.
It's bizarre. It's like a call centre, you know, weird. But we haven't met Ari as yet. But we're working our way there. That's the next trip.
Now, do you mind sticking around to after the news? Because I want to talk to you about the Emmy Awards. And we're talking about the Brownlows. Don't worry. We will be doing that.
The Brownlows, plural. Oh, this is amateur hour, footy fans. I'm sorry.
Sorry, guys. I know
Emmy's
nothing.
Plural. Brownlow, singular.
The Brownlows. The best. The gold Brownlow goes too. That sort of misinformation will persist after the news next on 774.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right, it's Giel or No Giel. No Giel once again in this hour. Just Tony Martin and Tony Wilson and Wayne Hope and Robin Butler are sitting in with us for the moment. As we say, we've been asking, what have you won? What is there anything, you haven't mentioned anything you've won, Robin, surely?
I haven't won anything.
Come on,
ever.
Go right back to childhood. There must have been.
The only thing that I can possibly think of, and it's not winning anything. This is me, you know, just being inventive, really, that theatre troupe came to school and I must have been in about grade two, I must have been about, you know, seven or eight, and they picked people out of the audience to be part of the stage show that they were doing, and I, you know, had my hand up really, really stretched high, really, really taut to say, please let me be in it, as did, you know, the entire school, and they wouldn't, you know, choose me, and they chose all the parts. And then at the end of it, when we thought all the parts had been assigned, they said, now, we need the most special part. We need the most special role that we could possibly have. We need to find the most special person in the school. And so my hand went up again. Everybody's hand went up again. I just had that feeling, this is going to be me. This is going to be me, which, of course, everybody always thinks that I knew I was going to win. And, of course, that feeling is hope, which later translates as I had some certainty about it. But what I was feeling was hope. And he did pick me. And then it was a joke and I had to play a bag. But the fact was, for a glimmering moment, I felt like that I had won. I had won this kind of prize. And I did, because until I got from the, you know, from where I was sitting up to be the bag for that walk. I was the most special kid in school.
And a career was born at that moment.
And a career was born. I had played
you
a bag.
You began as a bag, and you may be continuing that on.
And how was your bag received?
I think it was really well done, and I think I was very well received.
Michelle from, how do I say that place name?
Briagalong?
Are you from Briagalong, Michelle?
Well, that's pretty close. It's Briagalong.
All right. What did you win?
I'm sitting here right this minute with a Mount Sterling Woman of the Mountain 1988.
Woman of the Mountain? That was you?
That was me.
And what is the Woman of the Mountain? What did she do?
Well,
Sigrid Thornton style is what I'm thinking.
Not quite. I was taking the kids skiing and one of their friends, my two boys and one of their friends, and so we went up to Mount Sterling with a lovely afternoon in mind, and we found, in fact, that when we got there, there were races on. And so a little bit tail under the bum there, the kids and I thought, well, we'll go home because the races are going to mess it up. And then we went into the ski hire, and the fellow in the ski hire said, look, if you wait just half an hour, the races will be finished, and then you can go off and ski the trail. And so we said, well, we'll do that. And then the fellow said, look, we've got this one race for women, and we don't have any entrants. But if you'd like to enter, why don't you give it a go?
Just on your own?
On my own. And so I said, oh, no, I really won't. I'm here with the kids to do some skiing. And the boys said, come on, Mum, this is going to be terrific. You've got to do it. And so I did. But there was a proviso. There was a time limit. And the fellow said if I did it in 2 hours, he'd give me the trophy. So I set off with the kids, and they were encouraging me all the way along the along the track. Come on, Mum, you can do it. Come on, Mum,
you
can
do it. They knew you could be Woman of the Mountain. Well, well done.
And then at the end of it all, I actually had to take the skis off and walk the last 200 metres because there wasn't quite enough snow.
Dear.
1 hour and 55 minutes, and all those kids encouraging all the way, I came home with this wonderful marble trophy with a beautiful plastic golden sphere on it.
Well, it was all worth it.
It was indeed. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Michelle from Briagalong, Mountain Woman of the Year.
It's a pleasure. And thank you to all the Tonys. It's a great show.
Thank you, Michelle. Chris from St Albans is here. And Chris, I understand you want to pitch an idea to the executives from Gristmill. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Look, right.
We've had the dish.
Mm. Yes.
And we've had the castle.
Yes.
And we've seen the librarian.
Yes.
Mm. I want to know...
Something based on the.
The band. I want to know why some clever Australians, maybe with some British money, haven't made a nostalgia serial about a certain place in South Australia and called it the Rocket Range.
Well, that's obviously been preying on our minds in here as well. What are you talking about?
Well, Woomera is more exciting than an immigration detention centre.
Oh, there's a lot more going on.
You're going back to the testing, the nuclear testing.
Forget bomb testing. Woomera was terrific. I've got bits of videotape from a little holiday I had in Woomera.
I mean, it is the Woomera too, isn't it?
Oh, that's a
separate thing.
A spear thrower.
Yeah.
So you figure that these bits of videotape you've got could be expanded into a feature?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There were so many things that blasted off, exploded, or crashed.
Right, so this could be a job for perhaps Michael Bay, the maker of the Transformers films. He likes blowing things up. Get him involved. What's the story? What's your story like?
Well, the guts of it is they embarked on an escapade long before the Americans were interested in racing with the Russians to build a rocket that would deliver an atomic bomb from the British Isles to the Russian border called Blue Streak.
Right.
And by the time they got it to work, it was obsolete because the Americans had come up with the Polaris submarine-based missile system, and that anyway they'd gone off and got into manned space flight and left us well and truly behind, although they copied the Woomera rocket range layout when they started Project Mercury, because they were 8 years behind the Russians, and we were way ahead. And
so it's a prequel from the Earth to the Moon, that show that was made by Tom Hanks. We could make this as a prequel.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe get Sam Neill back in the cardigan from the dish.
Yep. He could be the man at Salisbury near Adelaide.
And we'd have to get the film crew to sign away all rights to their health as we all degenerate into radioactive-related diseases in later life.
It's got legs.
600 kilometres away from Woomera, that sort of stuff. But the thing was, they did do great work, and what's now the French Ariane rocket is the direct descendant of the Europa three-stage satellite launcher that never succeeded.
No, you're right. This is a comedy story that needs to be told.
Absolutely. But Blue Streak was terrific, by the time it worked, it was obsolete.
Well, Chris, we've got a Rebecca Twigley to talk about, so we're going to have to go. but it is very interesting, your idea.
Yes, well, the executives at Gristmill are looking into that. A feasibility study has been commissioned. Guys, have you been watching the Emmys this afternoon? Have you seen?
We haven't. I've been trying to hold off to watch
the whole shebang. I see you don't know who the winners are.
We've seen bits and pieces.
I will mention one person who I think is a very deserved winner, and that's that bloke Bryan Cranston.
Oh,
who won last year Best Actor for the show Breaking Bad, which is my show to recommend to people at the moment. A lot of people don't know what it is. Also has what sounds like a very depressing premise. A lot of people can't get past the premise of it, which I won't even say, but it is a fantastic show,
is it not?
It's
a fantastic show, and Brian... I was about to say Brian Brown, who is also very, very sure. good, but not in this. Brian Cranston is unbelievably good.
He was the... I never watched Malcolm in the Middle, but was he the dad?
He's the dad in Malcolm in the Middle.
Very good in that.
Yeah, and he does such a flip. He does such a 180 in this. He's very, very good.
And if you think you want to watch that show, just remember, in 58-point type, video piracy is a crime.
That's right. Well, anyway, well, thanks for coming in on our spectacular brown carpet evening here at Evenings on 774, Wayne and Robin.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much for having us, boys.
Good work on... The shows I mentioned, Very Small Business, if you didn't see it, it is worth checking out. A great DVD of that is in the shops now. Librarian Series 1, obviously available. Series 2, when is that in the shops?
October 1, I believe.
Yes, it is. October 1.
Excellent. And all the best with future endeavours.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Now, let's have some music. And then, finally, what I'm calling the Brownlows will be covered with the severity and seriousness that it deserves. Next, but first up, The Cat Empire, So Many Nights. It doesn't matter what I say. That's The Cat Empire with So Many Nights here on 774, ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, Tony Martin. And Tony Wilson filling in for Derek Gill, who you can hear on the Conversation Hour. I think he's still doing that, isn't he, Tony?
Yes, doing a fortnight filling in for John Fain there. So we're the fill-ins for the fill-in.
That's right. Now, look, the Brownlow medal, just quickly, I know you did play football briefly.
Did I win one?
Were you ever part of that magic?
No, I never made it. My father got the most votes for Hawthorn one year in the Brownlow and won a bed from Hawthorn. And I slept in that bed for much of my early life.
Pete Dillon is with us, 774 producer, who's been at not the red carpet this evening.
No, it's a blue carpet this year.
What is that about?
Look, there was a couple of ideas. The first one was that it was all about the particular car company and their hybrid vehicle that is the major sponsor this year. The other idea was that it was all about prostate cancer, so I couldn't quite get the goods, so I didn't get any at all.
And what did you see when you were down there?
Oh, I saw a lot of dresses, a lot of blokes looking like penguins, just in it's black tie, so there's no opportunity for guys to express themselves.
Right.
I went to the Brownlow 2 years ago and realised that my notion of black tie being an actual black tie is no longer what your young... cashed up football black tri dresser thinks. Like they were attacking with often not black tie ties. You know, have they stopped doing that? I think the AFL
there was a couple of interesting
rules.
Waistcoats and lots of black suits. Brett Deledio, for example, because there's a prize for the men this year for the best dressed.
Right.
Pick that.
Really?
And he's a nice big lump of white bias binding around the edge of the lapels and stuff. Black and white striped tie. He was about the only one. Shane Crawford looked like his was run up this afternoon.
Yeah, Shane Crawford was the one that stood out for me 2 years ago as well. It was just a remarkably un-black tie-y black tie. Was he in black? No.
Charcoal.
Charcoal.
Does anyone, you know, are there any anarchists who decide to wear the T-shirt with the printed-on tuxedo?
No, but Stephen Curry, comedian, who's doing a bit of work on the stage there this evening, he and his cohort, his mate that's presenting with him, arrived in the 70s, blue crushed velvet flared trousers and the ruffled shirt. Very nice look, blue velvet tie.
Beautiful.
Stephen was looking the goods.
Does anyone do what I believe is known in the industry as the Kerry Ann, where you arrive and go up the, in this case, blue carpet, and then you pop out the back door, and then you come back in again, and possibly even a third time?
Only person I did see do that was Fifi Box.
Really?
Because she was hosting the carpet.
The event.
So what's the idea of the Kerry Ann, as it's called?
Well, because you've just got more chances of getting into Who magazine, or a fictional magazine that might be photographing you to be there. That's been done.
I did actually comment at one point, I had a bit of an audible gasp because there was two women dressed in the same dress, but then I realised they had done a Kerry Ann, so it wasn't the same dress after all, it was the same woman.
And any sort of, catty behaviour on the carpet?
No, it was pretty good. I think the catty behaviour was from all of the journos.
Not really.
Sort of trying to push one another out of the way to get the best shot.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that cattiness, Tony, because Felicity Percival, who is the partner of Geelong captain Tom Harley, she gave some tips in small paper this morning. Now, remember, ladies, you've come with a man, so it's important to share the limelight. Hold hands as you walk the carpet. Pose with them. Don't push in front of other beauties having their photo taken. Wait your turn. Be nice.
She came in about the same time as Rebecca Twigley, who is the partner of Chris Judd. And she was very gracious. She sort of stood there for a bit and then she wandered past. Tom Harley is, I think, one of the nicest blokes I've ever met. He's a terrific fellow. And she looked fantastic. So I didn't end up getting to speak to Rebecca.
Well, not Rebecca here, but Felicity had other great tips. Apparently, you don't necessarily need makeup. What about just feed the face with oranges and walnuts for max skin glow?
No oranges and walnuts. There was more spray tan in that place than I think I could possibly see at the Palazzo Versace on the Gold Coast. It was fake tan for days. There were a couple of what I would call disaster outfits. One in particular, I would suggest a woman of a certain age.
Right.
Not the most flattering dress she could have chosen. And there was a couple where, a slight breeze and we would have seen some a wardrobe malfunction, I think.
But see, the problem is there, Tony was showing me, if you make a mistake like that, it doesn't go away, it stays in the photo file.
It is forever.
And you've got women there who, I guess, aren't really celebrities.
Well, this is the thing, that the partners of footballers may not be even with that footballer in a year or two, and yet... Here are the people that were named today. Emily Cullen, 2005. Leah Hudson, 2003. Candice Rattray, 2001. And Shane McClintock, 2005.
McClintock is the wife of North Melbourne captain Brent Harvey. Last year, there wasn't a lot of good things to say about the dress she wore. I thought it was okay, but I'm a North Melbourne fan, so maybe that's my bias. But she looked very, very elegant this evening. She looked really lovely.
It's interesting that you might barrack for particular dresses on the night because of your allegiance to a club. Why would I barrack for Hawthorn partners of Hawthorn players, given in a fashion sense, I've been barracking for the Hawthorn jumper for so long? Surely my opinion is null and void.
But, I mean, imagine if you'd wore the wrong dress in 2001
and it's
still coming around in the paper. Ouch.
In the small paper.
Now,
we should talk footy. Tony probably won't want us to, but...
He can sit there and look interested.
I'll learn something.
What's happening in the markets and what do you think, Pete?
I think Gary Ablett is a shoo-in to win this, and he should. He's won the last three most valuable players, the awards that are voted by his peers, by players. He's won coaches' awards. He's won every award but the Brownlow itself. And I asked him in the package we'll hear shortly why... he's not noticed by umpires. I mean, he's just a phenomenal footballer, and if anybody deserves to win, he does. Second in the betting is Collingwood's Dane Swan, and I would be a bit mindful if he does win it. I think they might have had a bit of a mad Monday today. He may have had one or two carbonated refreshments and was really struggling to be completely coherent. A couple other teams have obviously had a mad Monday, and speaking to some of them, I had a bit of fun trying to edit those down.
Right. I hope Miss Dane doesn't win it. He pulls off a Kanye West and hits the stage, drags the microphone from the actual winner and gives his thoughts. That's my hope for the night.
Well, the broadcast is not... I mean, I haven't seen a lot of it, but it feels to me like it needs a bit of that kind of action, really. It's
a bit of Glenn Milne at the Walkleys a few years ago.
Yeah.
See, for the uninitiated, the Brownlow may seem boring, but it has a beautiful rhythm and a really good caller. And Dimitri is not the worst caller. He has pretty good rhythm. Mm. Ross Oakley actually had the best ever rhythm 10 years ago, but it's loved by those of us who love it. And in fact, I can't believe I'm here.
Pardon me.
Should we have a bit of blue carpet action?
Let's.
Dane Swan from the Collingwood Football Club, mate. You're the second favourite to the tonight. How do you think you're going to go?
Oh, mate, who knows? Who knows how the umpire's going to vote? But Ablett should win. He deserves to anyway, just from Chris Tarrant, I think.
You've had some pretty impressive possession gets in some of the games. Why are you disqualifying yourself?
Mate, who knows? I'm not going to walk in here and say I'm certain to win it, am I? But Ablett's had a much better year than me, so he certainly deserves to win it, so I hope he does.
Chris Judge from the Carlton Football Club. How do you rate your chances tonight? You're one of the money boys?
Well, you never know. I think Dane Swan will get up. I think he's had a pretty impressive year.
So no money on G Ablett for you?
No, look, he's had a great year, and there'd probably be no one more deserving than him to win it, but just when you miss three or four games, it probably makes it pretty tricky.
Simon Black from the Brisbane Football Club, how's it going?
Yeah, going well, thanks. Good.
How do you rate your chances tonight? You seem to be a sleeper every year.
Oh, look, I don't think we'll get many tonight, honestly. I snuck a few last year, and I didn't expect it, but I think I had a better year last year, so I don't think I'll be out there this year.
Joel, quick chat to us, mate. Are you excited about the night?
Yeah, excited. Yeah, no, it'll be good. Hopefully come down and see Gary go well, and a couple of the other boys too.
How do you rate your own chances? There's a bit of money on you.
I haven't put it on myself, so I don't think it will be too well. So, no, it will be all right. As I said, hopefully Gary gets up and we just have a good night.
Nick Del Santo from the St Kilda Football Club. Mate, you've scrubbed up well.
Yeah, scrub up when I have to. It's not very often that we get to put the suit on.
How do you rate your chances tonight?
Very slim. I'm here to have a good night, but I think it'll be pretty quiet for us. I think Gary Ablett will get the amount of votes that he needs to get the win, and if not, probably Dane Swan.
Lee Montagna from the St Kilda Football Club. Mate, how do you rate your chances this evening?
Oh, look, I don't think I can win. I think Nick Del Santo is probably our best bet, but I'm just looking forward to the night, and hopefully one of the boys can get up.
He's just told us to put our money on you, so we're going to be in a bit of strife.
Yeah, we're in the car together, so he said me, I've said him, so either way we can get each other through.
Nick, how do you rate your chances tonight?
Pretty slim. I didn't play too many games in the midfield this year, so I might struggle. But
there's actually a bit of money on you. What do you say about that?
Silly.
Gary, you've won players' awards, coaches' awards. You're well respected by your peers. What do you think it's going to take to get the umpires' attention?
Oh, look, it's a tough question. I mean, hopefully I had a good enough season to poll a few votes tonight, and we'll see what happens at the end.
And personal preparation for the weekend, obviously your third grand final in a row.
Yep.
How are you feeling about it this early in the week?
Yeah, we're feeling quietly confident. I mean, we're just glad we've got another opportunity and another crack at a premiership.
If you can't tip yourself, who are you tipping for tonight's medal?
I think there's a lot of people that can win it. I think there's so many people that had good season. I don't think there's any one person that stands out. I think Dane Swan, Chris Judd, Adam Good, Simon Black. I think, you know, there's a lot of players that can win it.
Well, there you go. And Pete, can I just say we have someone on the line, Helen from Gippsland. You're not too happy with the Brownlow coverage, is that right?
I'm very happy for the guys. I think it's a really important evening for them, but I think it's a bit sad that the hens, you know, take precedent over the roosters.
They're upstaging, you think?
Yes, definitely. It's a guys' night out for the Brownlow, and I don't see why it should be such a fashion parade and so much media attention and who's the best dressed as far as the women go. And, you know, like, it's a clash for the guys. The guys have got to focus on their football. They don't need to...
And Helen, the thing to look forward to, though, is after the Frocks are over at 8:30, we now get down to what I call the beautiful metronome of the Brownlow vote call, and you can just watch the guys punch each other as they get votes and scull beers.
Yeah, I know.
That's what the Brownlow becomes for the next 3.5 hours, and I love it.
Yeah, and then do the hens all peck themselves?
I guess they do. They do sometimes get some television time.
Yeah, well, if they're, I think it'll be something like that. Yeah.
Well, I think we should all settle in for that. Thank you, Helen, for contributing. I agree. It's like the Oscars, you know.
Someone's broken into my line, I think.
Someone's broken into your line.
I'm here.
Another program. Pete, thanks for providing coverage tonight, and thanks for making us feel very underdressed here.
That's
on the
all
show.
Right. Sorry that I'm in a suit. It's very rare for me.
Okay, Derek's quiz is next.
For the crack.
You know, if you look very close during the Brownlow broadcast, you'll see people with little sort of earpieces in. You know what they're listening for? Derek's quiz.
Absolutely.
Everything stops at the Brownlow.
And if you win tonight, I've heard there is some provision in the Brownlow program for you to get up at the ballroom and give a little thank you speech for people that have supported you. The ability to Google crucial moments.
1-300-222.
10 minutes starts now.
1-300-222-774 is the number to take part in Derek's quiz, being hosted by Tony and Tony.
And the carryover question from Thursday, which didn't go off the quiz, who is the only one of Wisden's cricketers of the century not to be knighted? That was the question. We've got Jenny from Warragul, or did we just speak to Jenny from Warragul?
Let's meet Jenny from Warragul again. Are you there, Jenny?
Yes, I am.
Is it you who we spoke to earlier?
Yes,
good
I am.
On you.
Now, do you know who is the only one of the Wisden cricketers of the century, I think that's last century to be honest, not to be knighted?
Trust me to be the first person, hey?
1-300-222-774, the number to call.
Am I still able to answer it?
You certainly can, are. Yes.
I kind of think I should know this one because it's a guy that did everything wrong. He got himself, he boozed up on the night before a test match. And,
9 minutes.
And made Donald Bradman really angry with him and stuff like that. But I can't remember his name.
Oh, sorry,
well, thank
Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny, for your contribution. Adam from Gippsland. Wisden cricketer of the century who hasn't been knighted. The other four all have.
Okay, who were those other four?
We actually gave them on Thursday, so I will give them again. Sir Vivian Richards, Sir Jack Hobbs, Sir Donald Bradman, and Sir Len Hutton.
What about Shane Warne?
Hey!
That's the one. Even I know who he is. 1-300-222-774, the number to call.
After Rove himself, who has appeared on the second most episodes of Rove Live? Rove's been on 207.
I don't know, Kevin Rudd?
Wow.
Wouldn't that have been exciting if you had his regular segment, Kev Space? No, sorry about that, Gippsland. Sorry about that, Adam. We move on to Nick from Colac. Do you know who is the person who's been on Rove the most amount of times after Rove himself?
Peter Hellyer.
Hey.
Peter Hellyer, a.k.a.
204
Strawny.
Times out of the 270. He's only missed three episodes.
1-300-222-774, the number to call.
The H in an HB pencil stands for its hardness. What does the B stand for?
B. HB.
H is for hardness. B.
Blackness.
Yay.
Blackness.
I should stop saying yay. It's unprofessional and unquizmasterish. What Batman is the star of a Herbie film?
Christian Bale.
No.
Sorry.
That would have been good, but...
Christian Bale, isn't it?
Sadly not.
The love bug, no.
Let's move on to Evan from Faulkner. Do you know which actor who has played Batman subsequently starred in a Herbie movie?
Okay, which Batman? Was it some kind of dodgy 60s Batman?
Ooh, I can't give you that.
Give you a clue.
That. Unfortunately, Batman is not my specialty, and being a child of the 80s, I'll have to say something stupid like Michael Keaton.
Correct. The film did star in Herbie,
serving me well.
Fully Loaded.
Herbie Fully Loaded, 2005.
Excellent.
Now, we're going to do a ballooning question.
Right.
The Montgolfier brothers,
yeah,
they were the ones that invented the balloon,
mm-hmm,
or made it suitable for flight. Name one of the farm animals that made the first ever populated balloon flight.
Did they take a cow with them?
No. Oh, you didn't even think about it, but it's wrong, unfortunately.
Oh, great.
The farm animal was not a cow.
1-300-222.
But some farm animals went up in 1783 in Versailles. We're going to, I think, Marco in Shepparton.
Or Mario, I think it is. Mario, do you know which was the animal that took a controlled balloon flight?
I'll go with the pig.
Oh, that's a miss as well.
No.
If you get any one of the three, you will successfully answer the Montgolfier balloon question.
1-300-222-774 is the number to call if you know about flying pigs, animals, or the Montgolfier brothers. We have Rod from Wandong. Is that how you say that name, Rod?
Well, I'm from Wodonga.
Okay.
And I'm in Wandong and it's pouring.
Oh.
You need an A on Wandong and it makes Wodonga, doesn't it?
It certainly does. But what was the animal that was flying in a balloon?
A monkey.
No.
No.
It is a farm animal. I'll give you that clue. It's not.
I just had to run down to get my phone off the charger.
5 minutes.
Never mind. It's a near miss, but I just wouldn't have found many monkeys in downtown Versailles in 1783. So they went with something a little more convenient. And does Adam from Hastings know?
Oh, g'day. No, I don't, but I'll have a guess. Farm animal, was it?
Yes.
Sheep?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Adam. A sheep, a rooster and a duck went up in that first ever, populated balloon flight.
The Montgolfiers had a few. 1-300-222-774, the number to call.
Who, from Peter, Paul and Mary, died this last week?
It was Mary.
Correct, Mary Travis.
Travis, yeah.
Tony has a book out called A Nest of Occasionals. In what sort of a shop will you find A Nest of Occasionals?
Oh. Op shop?
4 minutes.
Ooh,
that's interesting.
That just shows what a badly worded question this is.
I think you would have to accept
that. I'm
going
to have to accept op shop.
Yes, we're talking, of course, about A Nest of Occasional tables.
Given that tables are in op shops, we can't rule that out. Name the chicken who won a Brownlow medal. You may guess that it was a nickname rather than an actual chicken.
Yeah, I guess that.
Do you need a clue or shall we go to the... I'll tell you what, I'll give another clue. And he later served on the Burma Railway and was in the media, in the sports media. You've been great, Adam.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
We're going to have to move on to Andrew from Gippsland.
3 minutes.
Andrew, any idea who the chicken was who won the Brownlow?
No idea.
No idea. Matthew from Inverloch, do you know the answer?
Goldsmith.
No, I think you're thinking of Freddie Goldsmith in 1970, but no, I'm going way back. For this chicken.
Never known as a chicken. Sorry about that. 1-300-222-774. The number to call. Anne from Caulfield. Any ideas?
Although I have no idea about any sporting thing, I'm just going to say Chicken Little. Good night.
Thank you, Anne.
Thanks, but sorry that it wasn't the correct answer.
We've got Marie from Barwon Heads who may have it. Are you there yet, Marie?
Yes.
Who was the chicken who won the Brownlow?
Chicken Smallhorn.
Correct. Chicken Smallhorn, 1933, immortalised in a Bruce Dorr poem, so that mythology may be perpetually renewed and Chicken Smallhorn return like the maize god in 1,000 shapes, the dancers changing.
2 minutes.
How many pairs of chromosomes in a healthy human cell?
Oh.
Science.
44.
Oh, sorry about that. How many pairs it is as well?
Oh.
not how many.
Sorry, 22.
That's a miss as well. Thank you, Marie, for your call.
Stephen from Ballarat, do you have any ideas about chromosomes? How many of them in a human cell? How many pairs?
Marie may have just served up a monkey or something like that. Oh, no, not a monkey. That's wrong as well. Don't call in.
Stephen, any ideas?
42.
42? I'll just...
21.
Sorry, no. Neither of those answers is right. But I will repeat that it is pairs we're after, so not... the answer is in the 20s.
Okay. Steve from Gladstone Park, how many pairs of chromosomes in a human cell?
This is your 25. Last minute.
No. Sorry, not 25. Simon from Leongatha, do you know the answer?
How many? So you said the amount of pairs is in the 20s?
Yeah. Correct. How many?
Oh, I was born on the 28th, so try that.
28?
No, I'm sorry about that. That you're getting up into probably Tyrannosaurus Rex had 28.
1-300-222-774, the number to call for the quiz. Luca, do you know how many pairs of chromosomes there are in a human cell?
23.
Correct.
23, correct.
Luca, what's the third book of the New Testament?
Luke.
Correct. In what year did the National Gallery of Australia purchase Jackson Pollock's Blue Poles?
75, I think.
Oh, so close. No, I can't accept
it. Sorry, Luca. Alan from Wentworth, what year did they purchase Blue Poles?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do get to answer. Do you know?
I went and saw it, and I couldn't see much in it, actually.
Thumbs down from Alan, but what was the year?
I'll say 76.
Oh, that's such a shame,
sorry,
Alan.
That means that the prize is going to jackpot. Thanks for your review.
Thank you.
Alan didn't go home and ride a bike across the canvas himself. Australia, folk songs and bush verse, convict stain to shearer's blades. It's a 5-CD set. That will be up for grabs tomorrow night, as will the ABC Shop's Being Human Series 1, A Vampire, a Werewolf and a Ghost Share a House in Bristol. That's all going to be not auctioned off, but quizzed off tomorrow night. And we'll be opening with the question... what was my question again, Tone?
I don't know. As long as it doesn't
It's about what year was Blue Poles bought by the Australian government?
As long as the Montgolfier brothers aren't involved. coming up, Mick Thomas and Donna Jackson. That's next. For first, his Frente. Here's one from the past, Bizarre Love Triangle.
Every time I think of you, I get a shot right through into a bolt of blue. It's no problem of mine, but it's problem I find living a life that I can't leave behind. Sing for that final moment, you say the words that I can't say.
There you go, Frente with their version of Bizarre Love Triangle. 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson are filling in for Derek Gill tonight. What, Tony?
Did you participate in a Frente sketch on the Late Show? Which part did you play in that?
I was the guy in the blue jacket. I can't remember who it was, but that was, on the Late Show. And, the story goes, I don't know if it's a true story or not, but I think the character who Mick Molloy was playing actually broke up with his girlfriend after that went to air because she had laughed so hard at the sketch and Mr. Molloy's parody of her boyfriend. I don't know if that's true or not, possibly defamatory, but let's move on to an event which is, I think it may have been underway already. Dust is touring. And I think we're heading first to the Geelong West Town Hall, Geelong West, and then listeners in Shepparton and Sale, it's coming your way. Welcome aboard, Donna Jackson, and, of course, Mick Thomas. I'm trying to think if I've spoken to you before, Mick. Have I?
I think maybe years and years ago.
Back in the 90s, back in the Frente era.
I possibly
spoke to you. And Donna, I'm afraid I haven't spoken to you. Have, I apologise for anything I may have said.
You don't remember, that's right.
I'm having trouble explaining what Dust is. I mean, it's quite an elaborate concept. Tell us, if you can.
Dust is a show about the history of asbestos that's got songs in it. And it works with choirs in Geelong, Shepparton and Sale in October when we're doing it. People learn songs that have been written about asbestos in different ways.
Wow.
And we have about 50 people on stage. And the first half of this show, Dust, is like a sideshow. So you go to all these different little tents and you might see a magician who does magic, but it's based on how asbestos is made. Or you might see some bricklayers laying some bricks telling you about building crematoriums and how asbestos used to line crematoriums. And in the second half of the show, it's like a concert sit-down. So it's sideshow, rock and roll. We have a vortex of dust in there, like a sideshow thing you can look at where we've got dust spinning around. Yeah, and it's based on asbestos, so it's a bit scary.
This is an amazing concept. Whose idea was this?
Well, it was my idea to write a show about asbestos, and I didn't really want to originally. I was doing another show about the building industry, and I was working with Mark Seymour, and he wrote some songs for that show. It was called We Built This City, and it was on at Science Works, and we got to work with front-end loaders and cranes and big sort of butch building industry show. And while I was working on that show, I met a whole lot of building workers who just would not shut up about asbestos. And they were telling me stories. They're saying, look, you need to do a show about asbestos. And I thought, it's something that you mine out of the ground. I've heard that it's not good, but I thought you can't make a theatre show out of a chemical that creates cancer.
No.
And probably not a musical. Might not be the way to go.
No.
But I started doing some research about asbestos and reading about it, and I read a book by Gideon Haig called Asbestos
House.
Have you read that?
It's a great book, isn't it? Yeah, excellent. Because he's famous as a cricket writer, but his corporate writing and journalism's just as good as anyone's.
Well, when I read the book, Asbestos House, I thought, wow, this is incredible. What a fantastic Australian story about this product, asbestos, that they made fibrous cement sheeting out of, that we built, you know, your shed in your backyard out of. And then I remembered that my dad was a truck driver and he used to always grind back the brake pads, and I remember the smell of that when he used to hose the brake linings out. And then I, through that book, Asbestos House, I also thought about where we had asbestos in our lives, like it was in the electric blankets that we put on our beds as kids. And the actual hairdryer that we used when we used to do our hair for ballet concerts, that's one of the hairdryers in that. It had asbestos too. Like, it's this fantastic product that's sort of heat-proof, rodent-proof, acid-proof, waterproof, and it can never disappear. But it can create cancer, and there's a lot of it still around. So I thought, well, this is a big story about Australia, and it's sort of like the great Australian dream. We all want to have a house, and that there's this fibrous cement sheeting was fantastic to knock up a sleep out or build on a room on the back when you have more kids. Now, we all want our houses, but all these people use this product and now lots of people are getting sick from it.
And, and people would think that, oh, okay, there might be asbestos in the roof, but toothpaste, is that a product that had asbestos connected with it?
Asbestos was put into some brands of toothpaste. This is like in the 1950s and 60s, and it was also put into products like Play-Doh. So it's like this, it was everywhere. It was in condoms.
Really?
Yeah.
How alarming. There was a 7:30 report story a couple of weeks ago about carpet underlay being full of asbestos, people walking around the house stepping on their carpets, releasing asbestos into the air.
It's a really interesting thing too, because I thought it was something from the 1950s that's not around now.
No.
But it was stopped.
Can I just check, it's not still in condoms. Is that not the case anymore?
Which brand are you talking about?
Well, those asbestos ones, I don't think they have it in anymore.
No, they're not in, it's not in now.
But it's an idea that the Abstinence League are flagging to to try and limit their use.
But no, but look, I shouldn't be making fun. But I mean, how do you go from, okay, you've got all this information, how do you turn that into an entertaining night at the theatre? Where do you start?
I think you start by trying to find the humour. So these building workers that I was working with, one of them who was telling me this story about he got asbestosis because he built these crematoriums, and he built some of the best crematoriums in Australia, possibly the world, and that that was his job, bricklaying the crematoriums. And
he went back to fix one that was broken and jackhammered into the side of it, and that's how he got exposure to asbestos. But when he was telling me the story, it was sort of funny about getting asbestos from building crematoriums and his pride in building crematoriums. And he also said, when I go, I want to go in that crem and I want the lid off so I can see my work.
Right.
So I thought if there was a way that we could sort of link a little bit of humour through it. Mm. And so in this show, the hook line is, it's about a character who's based on, you know, inspired by Meredith Hellicar, who's the CEO from James Hardie. And so in this show, she goes to her hairdresser and her hairdresser's doing her hair and her hairdresser's using a new product of bleach that she puts on her hair. And she burns some of Meredith's hair off just before she's about to give the annual report for a company that's very much like James Hardie. And in that, you see a corporate woman, you see her relationship with her hairdresser, you see her in a place that she expects to be safe, and you see how products can really affect your body. Mm. And we don't expect things to harm us. So it's sort of, that's funny, and her hair gets burned off in the show. So
right. When you say a company very much like, are you forced to...
No. Everything... Well, sometimes in the show we've done things where we've used parts of, like, James Hardie's annual report in our show because it's on the public record.
Right.
Things like, well, you know, where directors say we're really... we'd like to do more about compensation, but we can't. And we need to increase the director's fee pool. You know,
right.
Things like that are all on the public record.
Donald, we've got Mick in as well. We should ask him. I gather you're spearheading the second half of the show, Mick.
Yeah, I'm sort of pretty much, I sort of come out at the start, then I, you know, do a bit of the sort of the welcome, part of the sort of welcome to the show bit. And then when the sideshows happen, I sort of, head out the back, but yeah, the second half of it, I'm there playing the songs.
Well, you're going to give us one now. What if you've got the equipment set up?
Yeah,
the sound check has been completed.
Yeah, well, bear in mind these songs were written by Mark Seymour, so if you don't like them,
blame Mark.
Blame Mark. But I got the call from Mark, and then subsequently Donna came out to introduce herself, and it seemed like a really odd thing to do for me because I'd never been in a show that I haven't written, you know?
Right, yeah.
But it's just a good bunch of songs, and it really, it does rattle along at a fair pace, you know?
What have you got for us now?
This is the first song, a song that Mark wrote about a place called Camellia, which is, what was the significance of Camellia? Was it the first place, or was it where they actually processed the asbestos in Australia? So
all right.
Could have been written about, there's a lot of towns where they processed it, but that was the first one.
Take it away.
We worked in the blower room, where the Amazite hung like snow, brought it in from South Africa. We were covered from head to toe, nobody told us. We put our lives on the line, so tell me, who can you trust when death has no name and nobody whispers a word? The secrets of Camellia dust. La 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 la. We laughed as the game got rough, and the rumors that hung in the air, we were mixing with dangerous stuff. And then the rumors turned into despair, but still as the years went by, the company's fortune was made, and the truth was like fire in the sky. And all down the line, they clung to the masquerade, the secrets of Camellia dust. La 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 la. When you're down to your last skin and bone, and your spirit is heading for home, stay hungry.
hungry for justice, she'll never leave you alone. We worked in the blue room, where the Amazon hung like snow, ordered in from South Africa. We were covered from head to toe, nobody told us that we put our lives on the line. So tell me, who can you trust when death has no name? Nobody whispers a word, the secrets of camellia dust. La 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 la.
Stuff. Mick Thomas.
Live in the studios at 774. If you've just joined us, that's a song from Dust, which is a show written and directed by Donna Jackson, who's with us. Music by Mark Seymour. Film by Malcolm McKinnon, and featuring a choir of 50 voices led by Mick here. And it's touring to Geelong, Geelong West Town Hall, 2nd and 3rd of October, the East Bank Centre, Shepparton, on the 16th and 17th, and at the Sale Memorial Hall in Sale on the 23rd and 24th. For more information, visit www.hubcapproductions.com.au or www.rav.net.au. That's, of course, the Regional Arts Victoria website.
We've got the news and the etiquette panel coming up, but given Mick Thomas might be Melbourne's, almost Melbourne's most famous St Kilda supporter, I do have to ask him how he's hanging together with 5 days to go.
I'm just hanging together, yeah. It's occupying way too much of my thoughts, you know.
You should win, won't win, might win.
I'm way too superstitious to preempt anything, you know. It's just been a really great year, and I just hope we can go one step further. But yeah, it's a big week. Hey.
Did you introduce Billy Bragg to the Saints?
So yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
And have you been in contact with him? Do you think he'll be following it this weekend?
Probably will. I think he'll keep an eye on it. It's amazing what he does keep an eye on.
He probably discovered the band, the Saints, for himself, but the club.
No, we introduced him to the Saints.
Oh, band, really? Yeah, as well?
Because he didn't know your product with us, with the weddings when we toured. So, the Saints song, and we introduced him to that. Yeah.
Excellent.
The weddings, is there? What is the status of the weddings these days?
One gig a year, at grand final eve.
And so that's on this week, isn't
it? Yeah, Friday night.
Excellent.
Rehearsals for that, or just bang straight into it?
No, rehearsals for sure. We've been rehearsing. Sort of been nervous rehearsals. but no, we have to do that.
I must mention that I just want to say something about the show, Dust. To me, you know, you would think that something like this would be a serious night and it wouldn't be a subject that you would get any humour out. But as the Australian says, it's a work that's neither earnest nor polemic. It's straight up moving and enormously entertaining. Donna, and particularly Donna, who's put the show together, and especially Mick, who'll be performing on the night. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for being involved in such a great project.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
We've got to get etiquette together, Tony.
We do, and we're going to do it with Howard Langmead and Jane Clifton. You've heard their voices on the panel before, I think, but they're going to tell us how to do it.
That'll be in the next hour on 774 News is next.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. How are things going at the Brownlows, Tony, as I insist on calling them?
Oh, I haven't got an update. No. I did do a bit of work, mainly to try and get my wife to tape it for me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll try and avoid the result, given we're going to talk etiquette for most of the hour.
We are going to talk etiquette, and to that end, we're joined by Jane Clifton.
Hello.
Now, I see you're described as author, actor, singer, broadcaster and public speaker.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
We'll get to the full iceberg during this hour. And, of course, Howard Langmead is here with us. Do you have an official Is it the right Reverend Howard Langmead? Do you have an official title?
Just nothing right about it, just the Reverend.
There's no,
I am a Reverend.
Letters that come after your name?
Oh, I got a couple of them. What? Which ones do you want?
Oh, we'll get to them all over the course of the hour. Have you guys ever won anything that's been our theme tonight? Are you winners?
I'm a runner-up. I'm a really good...
Lucky
I'm a really good second place getter.
For what? What were you seconding?
All sorts of... one of my big seconds, when I was a kid in primary school, there was a packet cake competition and I remember coming second.
Did you have to mix the cake or create a packet cake?
Oh, no. You had to buy the packet cake and then cook it.
Pretty good.
I thought I was very proud. I've still got the certificate.
I still got the cake. Which I quite like.
No, my mum's got the cake.
Still angry.
Laminated.
The person who came first, do you remember who that was?
No.
Where are they now? Exactly, you see?
I bet they're not talking to you, Tony.
No, they're not.
It wasn't you on the chain.
Exactly.
So many aren't.
What about you, Joan, in the winning states?
I've won nothing. I don't know, that's a lie. I did win a talent quest at Brigidine Convent in Floreat Park in Wembley when I was in about fourth form.
Wow,
and I won. I sang a gorgeous version of Barbara Allen. Folk song, lovely. We'll do a version for you later.
Sure.
And won a boxed set of stationery, violet scented, which I still have.
Wow. Really?
Tragically, I keep old letters in it.
Yeah.
I throw nothing out.
Can you still buy violet scented stationery? Is there any call these days?
Imagine receiving some violet. You'd know it was from Nana, wouldn't you?
I got a violet scented email the other day. That's all you can get, really,
in
that regard. You're a crime novelist, Jane?
Some would say that, others no. But yes, I have written a couple, three.
You have written a crime, because I had, both of us, the Tonys, we had, I think, maybe two crime writers, at least one crime novelist on the show last week, and I was asking cliches.
Where do the ideas come from?
Not where the ideas come
from. Please, because I'm going to go.
Not going to say that. I'm going to say, what are the cliches you have to avoid? What is when you sit down? What do you have to go, I mustn't...
In terms of crime?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think you have to embrace them all.
Really? Just get them all in there in a different order?
Is a genre. And people love it because it's got a beginning and a middle and an end and everything works out and the bad guys or the bad women get caught in the end. So it is it's got sort of not rules, but it's got a form and a structure, which is what attracted me to it as a control freak.
Genre really means cliche.
Kinda, sorta. There's nothing you shouldn't do. Well, I mean, it's good to have some characters. That's a start.
Who are your favourites in the crime?
In the crime genre?
Yeah.
Mostly English. Ruth Rendell, P.D. James, Elizabeth George, Barry Maitland, who's a local writer but originally English. I'm not really a big cut 'em up, shoot 'em down, serial killer kind of person.
Right.
If I read a sentence where someone says, he was packing a Glock, I immediately shut the book. Or there were a trail of bodies across Wisconsin and we're about to cut them up.
Well, that's lucky because we can't endorse Glocks here at the ABC for product reasons. Howard, have you thought of writing, because you do comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you thought of writing a book about a priest character?
I thought you'd never ask. I've written another runner-up. I was runner-up in an Age funny short story competition. That was a bit sad because that was actually my journal entry about ordination.
Oh, really?
Sounds pretty funny.
Yeah, I sent it to the Age and they put it in the...
That was hilarious, didn't they?
It was actually about being ordained.
Okay.
They thought it was a hilarious funny short story.
Prostrate yourself, don't you? Yeah. With your arms outstretched in front of the altar. Is that the wrong church?
No, they're wrong church, wrong... When you're becoming a nun or a monk
something
or something.
Else.
You do that, yeah. Yeah, no, we dressed frock up and walked down St. Paul's Cathedral down the aisle.
Oh.
But some strange things happened to me.
As long as there's a dress involved.
I look good in a dress, yeah. My daughter was in the cathedral. She was very young at the time, and she called out notoriously, "There's Daddy pretending to be a minister."
Oh, sprung.
Well, I actually thought it was quite prophetic.
Yes.
And is there a sort of an equivalent in the priest game to the Brownlow? Is there an award?
It's called Heaven.
Ah,
that's apparently. Yeah. There's only one way to win.
Make me 15 points.
No, we have debating competitions. It's called preaching.
Right, what about the Father Bob controversy? Has that got them talking?
Even the Anglicans are talking about it.
Oh,
it's absolutely unbelievable, all this. Well, it actually surprises me, this sort of secular modern Melbourne is absolutely intrigued by what's happening.
Well, we love a personality.
Oh, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, if Hitler came back tomorrow. Sorry.
I think he's doing the conversation
talking
hour,
other
I think.
Rules, yeah.
With Derek Gill. We couldn't get him. We couldn't book him. He's hard to pin
book?
Down. That book. I know, it's the book.
You've got a new book.
When's he going to come up with a follow-up? All right, that's offensive. That's unnecessary here on...
You know what happens to me? I can't believe I said it.
I can't believe it either. We're going to talk etiquette. This is meant to be the polite hour. We're going to go to a track and we're all going to get into tuxedos and dinner suits. Jane, perhaps you'll be adopting something twiggly-esque.
A frockless evening strap, perhaps.
For the rest of the hour.
Yes.
In the meantime, this is a choice of, I think, I'm not sure if John Standish or Tony Wilson chose this one. Both of you big fans of this track. It's a beauty. Lost Cause from Beck. And that'd be Lost Cause from Beck here at 774. I was just racing around trying to remember what album that's from. That's from Sea Change.
It was.
It's your album. You should know.
I saw him at the Palais, and that song was played, and they had just really simple design. They had lights, I think sort of green and red lights, balloons around the stage, and it was beautiful. I would rate it as one of the most beautiful moments I've ever seen in live music.
How appropriate for the etiquette panel. Jane Clifton is with us. Howard Langmead is with us. We're going to tackle some stumpers from the etiquette list. Listen to this. This is a wedding-related one, I think it's fair to say. Leanne of Elstonwick says, we have had some last-minute withdrawals from our list of wedding guests. Is it acceptable to now contact people who had originally not made the final cut and tell them that they can now come?
That's what do you think?
That's awkward, I think.
The great thing about this question is that it's come to two people who have commanded the mic up the front on wedding days in Jane Clifton, marriage celebrant,
absolutely,
and Howard Langmead, born into the into the marriage business.
Legitimate marriage celebrant.
Yeah, as opposed to doing the course. Living the life.
He's got special invisible friends on his side, whereas I don't.
Yeah.
But I think that this, Leanne, I need to say to you that if a couple of wedding guests have dropped out, I don't know why I looked at you when I said that, a couple of wedding guests have dropped out, it's good.
Mm.
Think of the money you've saved. These are trying times.
So don't bother
weddings
to
are
fill
expensive.
The spots.
No, and if the people didn't make the cut in the first place, they're not any nicer now.
But
you still don't like
Jane, it's not all about money, though.
No, it is about money.
Okay,
you've
it is
already
about money.
Paid. put this up.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've paid. So these people have dropped out post-paying. So these are 8 free spots. What
way
do you say now?
So it's all about money. You got your limits. So these people cut out. They could be people you really like.
So you pay up front. I've never done a wedding from that side.
Put it this way. This experience of Leanne from Elstonwick is very similar to one faced by Tony of Northcote.
Indeed.
And we made the call on the day.
What did you do?
And we got...
Pickle
and Kitty
people.
Came on the day. And they high-fived the entire wedding crowd, just so pleased to be... They told everyone they were from the bench and reserve group.
I reckon they'd be pretty special friends. I don't think everyone would be that happy, especially the ones who care about the frock. Have to go out and buy the frock, present, all of that.
This did happen to me.
But how did... So the people knew that they'd been rejected, or
they knew... This is the call I made to someone's voicemail on my wedding day. Hi, it's Tony. You may be offended by this, or you may just see it as an opportunity to come to a wedding that you weren't going to come to.
Did you have a coach
in
of football
5
team?
Hours, a wedding starts, and we'd love you to come. We were just strapped for numbers at the time. Hope you can make it.
And did they?
That's pretty good. Good line.
And they loved it. I think they loved it. They celebrated their last-minute-ness like you would not believe. They told everyone in the room that they were.
Were they the only couple? Were there other couples who weren't quite as ebullient about that?
Yeah, they were the most ebullient.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there were some others asked as well, and they did come. We filled it late.
I've been the wedding guest that's dropped out at the last minute, and I picked my own replacement.
Oh, seat filler.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, when I say dropped out, I was taking the wedding, and they were friends. So I was the priest celebrant of some friends, and I that week had a fairly serious problem in my disc in my back, which ended me up with back surgery. But I took the wedding, which was really heroic. I was lying flat on the floor, which is an unusual position for taking a wedding.
Did your replacements know the bride and groom?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Just wanted to know whether they weren't just coming in from anywhere.
Yeah, and I actually didn't straight out a point. When I was saying apologetically, I can take the wedding, I'm heavily on painkillers, but I can't come to the reception. And then they talked with me and suggested someone else in my family. Which is the way I refer to my mother, someone else in my family who might like to seat fill. And she was thrilled to seat fill, and that was at a few hours' notice.
That's good.
And Jane, when was the last time you suited up for a ceremony?
On the weekend.
Really?
This weekend, under the lowering clouds, on Herring Island.
Really?
In the Yarra. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful.
In fact, a lovely couple. And we all boated across in groups of about 20 or 30 on boats, and it was lovely. It was a very lovely ceremony.
I've seen Jane in action as a celebrant. I've been to in the same way as directors call it, a Woody Allen film, I have been to a Jane Clifton wedding. Right?
I love it.
It's actually a very special wedding to me because I am credited. Oh, this is a question for the listeners and for you too, Tony and Howard. Do I deserve the credit for putting this couple together? I was at the Sydney Writers Festival, and a friend of mine, Michelle, in Melbourne, had said to me, I really like this guy, Michael.
You were mentioned, in fact, in the speech as the matchmaker.
So then I now know that that Michelle likes Michael. I'm sitting with Michael in Sydney and I think, oh, that's right, Michelle likes Michael. Maybe I should ring Michelle and say, is it all right for me to tell Michael, who's whinging about his singleness, that Michelle likes him? I think that much. So I go outside and I ring Michelle and she, in a sort of a shy way, goes, oh, all right then. So I go back in, but I'm drunk at the festival.
It's crazy to imagine, but yeah.
I go to the bar and I forget to go back to Michael to tell him that Michelle likes Michael.
Drunken author at the Writers Festival.
So, it's unimaginable.
Who would dream of it? And so what happens next is that Michael doesn't know that Michelle likes him, but Michelle thinks Michael knows. Next time Michelle bails up Michael, she's batting eyelashes from here to kingdom come.
It's a Sandra Bullock film waiting to go. That's what it is.
And Michael must have picked up on this ostentatious flirting that was happening because Michelle was mistakenly thinking he'd been properly informed, and it happened.
Wow.
They got together and it worked.
You actually having to say the words, fantastic.
But do I deserve at that wedding? Am I the person who brought them together, or did they do it themselves?
Despite your failings, really.
Yeah. Partial credit, I think. You get associate producer credit on that one. That's it. I might just point out that it's raining in South Bank. That's happened occasionally from time to time. And we will be catching up with the duty forecaster at the Bureau later this hour for a full forecast, because I know that is really the highlight. The whole show really sort of builds towards our cross to the Weather Bureau, if you've tuned in. Now, let me move on to a new non-wedding related question. Philip from Ashburton. This is Neighbours at War territory. Do you want to go down that path?
Yeah, let's take it.
Philip from Ashburton says, we share a fence with our neighbours and it has recently become necessary to replace it. The neighbours are expecting us to pay half the cost of the new fence. However, the main reason for its deterioration is a large tree on their side, which has over the years slowly pushed the fence apart, destroyed the fence. Is it too much to ask that they bear the full cost of the fence? That's an ugly one, isn't it? How do you have that conversation without ending up on one of the shows?
Build a very big fence afterwards, because you wouldn't be talking to each other much after that, really. But legally, Everyone, you always have to pay the cost.
Yeah, you have to go halves.
You
got to
go halves. I think what you can do is tell them before you pay your half, they've got to cut the tree down.
Right.
We're not doing this again in another 50 years' time.
But you see, well, trees have got roots that go all. It's not just the fence.
We had a big fencing dispute last year with our neighbours. We had a fence blowing down in one of the big storms that Melbourne had, and our neighbours, well, actually the owners, so actually wasn't a resident there, there's tenants in there, and they were doing some really dodgy things, and he wanted us to just allow us to pay, but his good friend would do the fencing, and we wanted quotes.
Mm.
Yeah, then he wanted certain material, then he wanted it higher, then he wanted, and we're just saying quotes, let's talk, and he was dodgy.
I think there's a way around it, that you could structure the tree as part of the fence, remove any fence around the tree.
Right.
The tree forms part of the fence. I'm doing a lot of visual work here, which I know you'll appreciate.
The hands are going.
That the fence goes up to the tree.
Okay.
So there's no danger of any damage, and it's a beautiful thing. It's tree loving, it's neighbour loving.
Does it help you to be close to God in a fence dispute?
That's what I was thinking. Like, what are those conversations like?
No. Oh, look. Well, the problem was there was this fence dispute, and there's this neighbour, but I'm happen to be known as the priest who lives next door.
Right.
You know, the expectation that I'll be polite and kind and forgiving and giving. Well, polite and forgiving. But not so giving, as in there were certain lines, like the fence line.
Yeah. Do neighbours sort of speak to you differently than they would to other neighbours? Do they feel the need to throw the word vicar in before?
It's not that they speak to me differently; it's they avoid me differently.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then I had this workman quite literally swearing at me because he'd come through the fence.
Oh, no, not Kevin Rudd style.
I thought, you must be the Prime Minister. Anyway, no, because he'd been told by the other guy he could do the fence, and I said, no, we haven't agreed yet. So he was letting off the expletives, and I sent my wife out. She's not a vicar.
Cast a plague
on his
house.
Trooper from what I've heard.
Mrs. Vicar.
Yeah, but we got it all resolved, and we all forgave each other, and it's quite a lovely... Jane, following up, just rather than a fence going up to the abusive tree,
yes,
he's an image you could use the wood of the tree to make the fence.
But then you have to take the tree down, and people won't do... We have a tree like this, and people don't want to be taking the tree down.
I sense your sensitivity. You have a tree against
the
fence.
Not to talk about the tree and the fence.
On your side or the other side?
Jane, can I just say, Jane has SMSed to say they should call David Whiting on John Fain's show for free legal advice.
What a good idea!
You're getting perfectly good advice here on the Tony and Tony show. There's no need to bother John.
And just on Kevin Rudd swearing, I know we were talking about this earlier. He loves throwing the word robust about. That just, it's the way of getting out of trouble now if you're swearing, isn't it? Oh, it's part of our robust Australian...
He's mentioning bust.
Robust. It's got bust in it.
Exactly.
It's a semi-swear as it is, but it's the get-out-of-trouble card to play, isn't it? Oh, it's robust Australian political ALP language. Robustness.
I think he's the swinginest Prime Minister. He's been to a strip club.
Austin Powers.
He swears. Yeah. He's just so hip. I mean, look at that hair. It's just a front. He's got an afro under that wig.
Speaking of hip... We never have enough Tonys on this program.
Not enough,
Jane,
in the world.
Howard, we have one presenting the nightlife after 10 p.m. on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Tony Delroy, what's happening tonight?
Indeed, I'm going to continue to hold the banner high for Tone after 10.
Good on you.
And we're discussing trees, really. Well, other things, yes, we're going to talk a little bit about our connection or lack of connection to the environment.
And, right.
So Stephanie Dowrick is in tonight. She's written extensively about that.
And what about this plan to just grow trees throughout the outback of Australia and indeed the Sahara Desert as a way of combating global warming? Can that work, do you think?
Damn fine idea, although the CSIRO report, you know, everybody's been talking up the fact that what we should do is move our food bowl from, you know, Victoria and New South Wales to North Queensland and the north of Western Australia. CSIRO has just come out today and said, won't work.
No, can't work. Moving the bowl, not the answer.
Well, the problem is that you get 6 months of heavy rain, but it doesn't apparently fall in the right bits.
Right.
And it's not going to work unless we have huge dams.
Thinking caps back on.
Exactly. Another idea required. But Stephanie Darick, anyway, wants to talk to our lack of connection or our connection with nature. When was it, Tones? When were the last time any of you went for a bushwalk?
Oh, I've seen pictures of bushwalking.
I checked it out on the net.
I climbed up Mount Coolum in May. That's the last time.
I'm impressed. Look, the word is that we've lost connection a bit, particularly the rising generation. They'd rather Google it than go and see it.
That's right. So, you can see it on the internet, the bush.
Exactly. So we're talking choosing happiness tonight, getting back to basics and back to nature. Also, we're talking spring produce tonight. Barb Lowry's been investigated. I've got to say, I've been a little bit disappointed with the mango so far.
Really? Letting you down?
A little bit underdone, I think. You know, it's sort of, maybe it's just too early in the season, but we had a couple on the weekend, which were... we're going to be talking about some good things that are out there. We had, I went to a theatre season launch tonight, and they had some fantastic asparagi and fennel and broad beans and
really,
yeah, mushrooms. mind you, it's Jeffrey Rush's theatre company. Company B, so they're a little bit right. So nature, if you know what I mean.
So your review of the Company B production is good asparagus.
it was a season launch. It wasn't actually a play. Yeah. Was it? You know, they were launching 2010 for us tonight, which is very handy indeed. Look, we're also going to visit the city that never sleeps tonight. No, not Geelong. It's New York.
Oh, right. What are you doing there?
Malcolm Crowley wrote, first New York was a sort of provincial capital, bigger and richer than Manchester or Marseille, but not much different in its essential spirit. It's changed a little bit since then. It's having a little bit of difficulty emerging after 9/11. A lot of people still looking at the World Trade Center site and still seeing no replacement building. It's still below ground after about 8 years. So that's not a good sign, but there's been a lot of infighting apparently about the design and who owned certain bits. But we will talk a little bit about it. Fred Shaw is actually heading off there in the not too distant future, but is a regular visitor to the Big Apple, and so he'll fill that in. And also, I thought a little bit later on we might pick up the euthanasia issue as related to that poor fellow in WA who died. Starved himself to death.
Right.
It's one of those important precedents, I guess. It again raises the difficult issue of the right to end your own life by peaceful means in Australia. And so we thought we'd raise that as the issue of the day a little bit later on. And do our best to keep you entertained. Some great short stories starting tonight as well. But our main focus is going to be sniffing the roses after 10.
Sniffing the roses, euthanasia, bad mangoes. Tony Delroy has it all.
And he's told us that the plural of asparagus is asparagi.
Yes. We learn something every night on this show. Thanks, Tony, and all the best after 10. Time for some music. That's right. It's 774 Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Every night we like to play a bit of Frank Sinatra on this program. I have selected from the very underrated Sinatra album, Sinatra's Swingin' Session.
Best.
Often dismissed. Don't you agree, Jane?
Mm.
I agree. Yes, Tony?
Yes.
You know, you're looking at me like, just get on with it. That's what you're saying.
No. What I want to do is prize your Sinatra anecdote out of you by the end of the week.
Oh, I actually have a Sinatra anecdote.
Yeah.
Just the one?
It's a sort of six degrees of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. Frank did talk to him, if that's what you're angling
there
for.
You go.
I actually discovered recently reading Frank Sinatra biography.
He's
that
your father?
His dad, Frank Sinatra's dad's name was Tony Martin Sinatra.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's true.
That's right. That he in fact, his name was something like that. Or
France.
He changed.
Well, he was Francis Albert Sinatra.
No,
my middle name is Francis, which I like to assume
beautiful.
That it's Sinatra related.
Sing us a few bars world, of Come Fly With Me and we'll
see. Old MacDonald.
Yeah.
And chicks.
That's
the one I like to do.
As a connoisseur, you've obviously read a lot of Sinatra.
Well, I don't like, you know, the general Sinatra books just focus on him beating people up and, and you
I've
know,
got a
connections
great one for
to
you.
The mafia.
Frank Sinatra has a cold.
That Frank Sinatra Has a Cold is one of the greatest pieces of writing ever about Frank Sinatra by Gay Talese.
I've got the Frank Sinatra, the great painter.
Oh, yeah, because he was a painter as well.
I've put that in an op shop. It's all his paintings.
But that piece of writing you're talking about is available in the Frank Sinatra Reader, which is a fantastic compendium of bits of journalism about Frank.
Vanity Fair that it first published? I think
it might have. It was part of that new journalism deal in the mid-60s.
And some people credit it as the first one, don't they?
It possibly is, yeah. It was a great kind of... he just followed Frank around for a week.
Yeah.
And
caught him
with a cold. But my favourite Frank Sinatra phrase at the moment, this is a great book about Frank Sinatra, is called The Way You Wear Your Hat by Bill Zeme, and it's how to live your life in the manner and style of Frank Sinatra. And Frank once got into a fight, punched somebody out, and so it was obviously, you know, a matter of honour. And somebody said to him, "What happened to that guy?" And Frank went, "He became punched." That's my favourite.
Love that.
But it's hard to know what to choose from Sinatra's Swingin' Session. Yeah. Let's have this one. You Do Something to Me.
Yeah.
You do something to me. Something that simply mystifies. Something to me. Nobody else would do.
Thank you, Frank. Short and sweet from Sinatra's Swingin' Session. Arrangements by Nelson Riddle, of course. And Jane just observed that it has a great version of I Concentrate on You, but not the slower, fantastic version that we might play later in the week from the album, Francis Albert Sinatra and Antonio Carlos Jobim. Is that how you say it? The King of the Bossa Nova.
Yeah, indeed.
They did an album together, and that is one of the great albums.
Ella does a great version of I Concentrate on You Too. It's a gorgeous song because it's got such long phrases in it. You know that Frank Sinatra used to practice his long phrasing by swimming lengths underwater.
Because he could do the old circular breathing.
Just swimming underwater.
And Jane Clifton, have you ever sung a Sinatra song?
I've sung just about all of them from all... I used to... And it's weird because I grew up with a mother who adored Sinatra and Tony Bennett, and the house was always full of it. It's part of my kind of, you know, background and hard disk. So I do all these Sinatra songs, which are all in the wrong keys because they're all in boys' keys and have to transpose them up. But I adore them.
Do you have a favourite Sinatra song to sing?
I've got a million of them. But I do like... it's 2:45. What is it? I can't remember what the title is. One for My Baby. I do love it because it's got, it rocks out at the end.
That's another one we should play because the version of that on the Only the Lonely album, the production on that is, it's like a Radiohead song. It's got so many changes of atmosphere in it.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's the thing. It's got that tinkly-tonk piano at the start, and by the end you're busking out with the full band, and it's. I love that song. It's great.
That's a beauty. All right, we could talk Frank all night, but someone's going to get punched.
Yeah.
If we do that, back to etiquette. We need to talk etiquette. Nina from Hoppers Crossing says, about a year ago, some friends loaned me a DVD of their children's school play. It was awful.
Oh, cruel.
So I fast-forwarded to the end and then later pretended I'd watched the whole thing. Upon questioning me about it at a later date, they worked out that I'd been lying about seeing the whole thing and are now not speaking to me. How can I set things right?
Oh, man.
Reverend Langmead, your suggestions.
Oh, what a tangle web when we have kids. The number of people that fall out over their kids about how they treat their kids, but you don't respect their kids.
Well, this is true. I mean, there's a play on, a very fine play on in this town, I think, at the moment, with Hugo Weaving and Pamela Rabe and others, called God of Carnage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book which everyone's reading called The Slap.
Which is excellent.
I haven't read it, but
genius.
I've heard it's being turned into a TV miniseries.
With no part for me in it. And that's turned me right off.
That's actually hard to believe.
It's all young people and, you know, their kids. So I don't actually care. Yeah. But it's a great book. It'll be a great series.
Tony Ayres is, I think, having a crack at that. But what is the answer in a situation like this?
Well, there's two sides to it. Nina's told the lie. It's such an easy lie to tell, even though it's wrong. When I get emails, sometimes I glance at an email. It happened to me last week. Someone said, did you read my email? I said, yes. Then she said some stuff. I thought,
this from a priest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. I'd glanced at this email. Then she starts talking. I said, there must have been part of the email I didn't read. She said, yeah, it was
the whole
bottom bit. Yeah, I thought it was about, anyway. But so is, I said, yeah, I read it because you glance at it. Mm. And anyway, I'm feeling guilty.
I believe that Nina is not a parent.
Yeah,
anyone who is a parent would know.
You've got to be
the
honest.
Rules. Mm. No, you just know. Anyone gives you something with their child in it, you have to see it. Questions will be asked. If other people think, oh, I could just look at the beginning and the end. But if you are a parent and everything, your child is a genius, the greatest singer, the best sports person, you want everyone to realise this.
But what about other people's kids? I mean, sometimes you're so absorbed
as a
parent.
But as a parent, you know how you feel about your kids.
Do I?
So there are rules. There are rules you don't want to transgress.
This is actually a plot point in a film that's out at the moment called Funny People with Adam Sandler. There's a sequence where he hooks up with an old girlfriend and she's got kids now and she's thinking of leaving her husband, played by Eric Banner, for Adam Sandler. And she puts on a video of her daughter singing Memory from Cats in a school play.
I'd be walking straight out that door.
And, well, it's it. See, Adam Sandler's not impressed. He's seen it on Broadway, reckons it was done better. And so that kind of the whole relationship falls to pieces on that. On
music theatre, it's a breaker.
Yeah. Kids are the breaker.
So are you able, you've obviously got the insight to, and you've got two children. Mm. Would you take it badly if someone did this?
I wouldn't force my videos of my children on anybody else unless there was something, and I'd know that no one would want to see all the way through, you know, no matter what geniuses my children are. You'd say there's a really great bit that's funny and say, just fast forward to that. You don't need to see the whole thing.
Like the bit where my sister got cleaned up in a line out where decked her.
That'd be good viewing.
Where you get a bit of slapstick.
But look, it's like all sorts of things people want you to read or watch or see or hand you a book. And if I don't want to read it, I'll say, look, I've looked at it, but I haven't read the book. I give it back because I don't want to keep it any longer. I've had a glance at it, but I don't think I'm going to read it all. Because if you start bluffing, you're going to get caught out.
Do you think the world's not tough enough for you to just go, look, I read the first couple of pages and it's just, you know, it's crap.
Well, if it's crap, I'd say it's crap for me. So, look, it's not for me.
Would you say that?
I'd say it's not for me because it's crap to me. Right. Because that person's obviously loved the book. I actually get given all sorts of books by people in the congregation who think I must read this, I must read that.
And really? What sort of stuff? What do they give you?
Oh, it's...
the bride strip there?
The thorn bird?
Not a lot of those. You'd be surprised how rarely that happens, just on occasion. Yeah, no, it's what you would call light theology sometimes, so that stuff. He's a good Christian book.
The Power and the Glory.
The Secret. The Secret. I've had that recommended. Or else it's just a good novel that they've loved because it's got some, you know, good moral attributes or something, and the vicar should read it. Or they just think I'm plain illiterate and I should read some good books.
What's the best ever depiction of a priest in a book?
Is it The Power and the Glory? That bloke.
The whiskey priest.
He has a crack, doesn't he?
Power Without Glory or The Power and the Glory?
I'm just trying to
What about Eric Liddell in Parrots, Chariots of Fire?
Chariots of Fire.
I've now gone to movies.
You've gone to movies.
Yeah, how do you rate...
Talking of Six Steps of Separation, my mother went to school with Eric Liddell.
Really?
Yeah, in China, believe it. He went to school in China.
Talk about the Chinese.
My mum went to school in China, as you do.
How much do you dislike Eric Liddell's sister in that movie? She doesn't want him to run. She wants him to go to China.
It's so long since he's in the movie. I forgot he had a sister in the movie.
Oh, she's a pain. She's such a pain.
I know. Anyway, so I'm that close to him because he knew my mum.
Oh, I can't believe it.
How do you rank Derek Nimmo in All Gas and Gaiters?
If you want stereotype.
Below par?
Below par. Definitely below
par. Vicar of Dibley?
I love her.
We all do.
She's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the Vicar of Dibley. She's right up there in terms of clergy.
She makes God kind of
except if you were going to have a kind of special invisible friend, she really makes him quite attractive. Yeah, yeah, makes it work, really.
She makes the whole Church of England thing look pretty ridiculous. Like,
but that's sort of good.
But that works well for me too, yeah.
And Tony Martin, in his Green Guide article last week, said that Father Ted is one of
the most... I love Father Ted.
Though, one of the great things about Father Ted, I mean, I don't mean great in terms of the larger picture, but in terms of a comedy show, is you never ever see him doing anything religious whatsoever. He's usually laying bets.
Or taking
part in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Which is with my lovely horse. It's just great.
When I went to Ireland last year, said she, showing off, and I was really careful not to mention how passionate I was about Father Ted, because I felt like I'd be like someone coming to Australia and saying, oh, Neighbours, it's the greatest show. We go to Ramsay Street? But they adore Father Ted. I can't remember the actor's name.
Dermot Morgan.
And he is just a national hero and absolutely adored by everyone. And they're still getting over the fact that... And, you know, he died at the rap party.
He died the next day. Yeah, I think they shot the final episode and it finished at 11 o'clock and he went home and dropped dead. But there was a lot of people, and I was one of them, didn't watch it for years because I thought it was just going to be a twee show about vicars.
Oh, it is genius.
It's not at all. It's full
We've actually joined the Father Ted fan club.
Have you really?
And there is a festival that's... Because there's a dispute of where it's shot. There's the island and there's
Craggy Island.
And there are two festivals in Ireland in both
rival festivals
that both claimed that's where it was shot. Yeah. But I missed it when I was there. Otherwise, I would have gone and got all the merchandise.
Definitely. If you've never seen Father Ted, the DVDs are available.
Jane, you mentioned Neighbours. Years ago, the priest was on Neighbours years ago.
I'm thinking of Father Bob. Father Bob, played by Tony Martin.
My kids were watching, that's my excuse, my kids were watching Neighbours, but they had a priest with an earring in.
Oh, outrageous.
And at that stage, I had an earring. They're actually portraying a priest.
A groovy priest.
Just an actor who came to work that day and forgot to take it out.
Forgot to take it out.
That's him. Yeah.
It has been pointed out to me that we have not had any music from across the Tasman tonight, Tony. Mm. So let's rectify that now. Here's a track from The Brunettes. This is You Beautiful Militant. The Brunettes with a beautiful and vaguely disturbing song called You Beautiful Militant from the album Mars Loves Venus. The Brunettes from across the Tasman have, I understand, a fantastic new album on the way. Tony Wilson and Tony Martin filling in for Derek Gill tonight. We have Jane Clifton, Howard Langmead here in their capacity as etiquette connoisseurs. And I will just say, how's this for a great SMS from Suze, Tony? She says, I was 8 months pregnant and went to the same Beck gig at the Palace that you were talking about before, Tony. The only music that would settle my daughter after she was born was that Beck song that you just played, being Lost Cause from the album Sea Change.
And the lyrics, that Lost Cause thing, would have even played into your state of mind. There is nothing that can do it. I might actually try it tonight because we're on about an every 2 hour feeding schedule at the moment. So, Tam, if you're listening, let's queue up the Beck and see how we go.
Now, we do have more etiquette issues to get to, but firstly, everything must pause for a moment because people are on the edge of their seats hearing they want to know what the weather is. Peter Newnham, are you there?
Yeah, good evening, guys.
Senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, give us the mail.
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit of rain currently falling across Victoria, and there's also some thunderstorm activity in the north. So we've got a few warnings out. Flood watch for some of the catchments in the northeast, including the Upper Murray, Mitumita, Kiewa, catchments. There's also a severe thunderstorm warning out for the northern half of Victoria, and the most significant thunderstorms at the moment are just near Horsham and another one just north of Echuca. Well, there's also a severe weather warning for damaging winds in the Alpine areas, so a fair bit happening. Also, some pretty good rainfall totals already recorded in the last 12 hours, up to about 25 millimetres in the Horsham area and 10 to 15 millimetres over most of the western half of Victoria. So some pretty good rain, and that rain will extend southeastwards overnight tonight, with most of Victoria likely to receive between 5 and 20 millimetres, guys.
So even the Mallee, it says here, the severe thunderstorm warning for the Mallee, that mustn't have happened for a long time.
Yeah, they've been a bit short of rain, that's for sure, but there's been sort of between 10 and 15 millimetres recorded in the last 6 hours across much of the Mallee. Some pretty big thunderstorms affected the Mildura area, but most of that rain's now cleared eastwards out of the Mallee, and so it's more northern country, northeast districts that are likely to experience pretty heavy rainfall over the next few hours, but also in the Melbourne area where it's raining pretty heavily right now.
Where's the damaging happening again? I heard the word damaging.
Yeah, I've used that term a couple of times. There's been some storms that could have produced some damaging winds in the Mallee, but then the risk area now is the northern half of the state, in particular elevated areas, so the Alps could receive pretty gusty winds, so we have a warning out for damaging winds for the remainder of tonight and tomorrow in those elevated areas.
Giant hailstorms the size of tennis balls, any sign of that kind of activity?
Not quite, but there were some pretty big storms over South Australia today. I don't know what size the hail was, but there were, you know, coverings of hail across the ground in South Australia. But fortunately for us, those storms have weakened a little bit over the course of the day and just producing pretty good rainfall across much of Victoria.
Are we up to, are you going to go this early in the week with grand final day, or do you want to let it settle for a while?
Look, I'll have a stab. There's still a bit of uncertainty with these sort of rain and low pressure systems around. There's a bit of uncertainty, but look, let's cover Melbourne. Basically, rain tonight and up until about dawn tomorrow, and then pretty clear during a lot of tomorrow. Chance of showers tomorrow afternoon and evening, a maximum of 21, and then showers on and off all week with maximums in the mid to high teens. And at this stage for grand final day, it looks like there'll be scattered showers across a lot of Victoria, chance of thunderstorms and hail, and that. Same goes for Melbourne and the MCG. So definitely the risk of some showers affecting the game, maximum of probably only 14 or 15 degrees and fairly fresh westerly winds. But of course, it is still 3 or 4 days away, and no, we're not 100% sure. Hopefully the low or front that's going to bring that rain will slow down just a little bit and it'll remain clear. So this has just got to cross your fingers. It's rare for us to be crossing our fingers for no rain, but that's what we want for Saturday at about 2 p.m.
Well, I think it's just you guys playing on Nick Riewoldt. No one else can stop him. You need about 20 mils of rain.
Yeah.
All right, Peter. Thanks very much for that.
Okay, guys.
We'll be hearing from you tomorrow.
Yep.
All right.
Again then.
Good on you. And, of course, a language warning down there at the Bureau. I don't want to hear any bad language down there at the Bureau. But remember, if there is any swearing and somebody questions you about it, you're just being robust.
Okay, I've got a cough button here on my little terminal, so if I think I might drop one, I'll hit that.
Good on you. We don't want to spoil the program at this late date. We do have time for one more etiquette question, Jane and Howard. Ryan from Morwell writes, after he was evicted from his flat, my brother moved in with me, the intention being that he would find a new flat. Then he lost his job and so has been staying with me now for 5 months rent-free. To be blunt, he is a pain in the ass. Is there a nice way to tell him it's time to go? A lot of issues there.
With you mean without being robust?
Yeah, without being too robust, unless it's in an Australian ALP kind of way.
Right, okay.
It's acceptable, apparently.
So you get Rudd to come in and do it for you.
Sure. He's available.
Yeah.
He'll fly in.
Yeah.
I'd leave him a note.
Really?
Just leave him a little note.
I don't think there's any way around
the coffee.
Once he's in there.
You've got to go.
Well, you can tell him to go. There's just no nice way. Just polite. You just say, mate, it's not working.
What about a parent if they're alive?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell mum on you.
It's a sibling.
Well, that's it. We don't know the age of Ryan Morwell.
Yes,
well,
he could be 5. Little boy's looking for a flat. He's got to go. He's
annoying.
Get your toys and off your shoes.
Exactly.
The age doesn't matter. Mum, he won't move out.
Exactly.
But even if he's 25, I think if there is a living parent, that that is a way out.
Go running to mum
and say, and then you don't say it's from the brother. You just say, get mum then says, you've been there a long time. And really it's from you.
Good. That's nice.
Then, so, and maybe the parental pressure helps. But maybe the kid reacts against parental pressure.
You've still got to let him know, because, you know, mum says you've been there a long time. He says, but my brother doesn't mind.
There is another way too, is that you could go and find him flat. Go looking and go, look, I found this great place. It's just around the corner. You could still go back for meals and that.
He's going to say, I haven't got a job, so you've got to find him a job as well.
And the girlfriend.
Where does it stop?
Something to do with washing.
Is this an instance where you could call in, say, the local priest to mediate? Is this the kind of work?
You'd be surprised it happens.
Really?
Well, that's the job, isn't it?
People come to me with these issues. Basically, in the end, I say, the last thing the local priest wants is to get between any domestic, even between two brothers. It's talk to him yourself and then come back and tell me how it went.
And Ryan from Morwell doesn't state whether he lives in a large house with many rooms.
No.
His brother came in from a flat. He's probably, you know...
It wouldn't matter, though.
Wouldn't it?
No. Even a large house with someone annoying over 5 months.
you think?
You're too close, yeah.
Finally got out of home.
And paying no rent at all. I mean, when you're unemployed, it's really tough, but you are getting something. I mean, even unemployed people can pay a little bit of rent, so he is a bit... He's freeloading.
It's 5 months has been going on.
5 months with no rent. You got to address that. You got to say something, say it's not on.
Well, good luck with that problem, Ryan. I think we've offered every possible solution. We've actually almost given out serious, helpful advice.
We were bordering on that for a moment. Hello.
Last week, it was not a jot of sense spoken in this time slot. I assure you of that. I've been wanting to say this all hour. Howard, anything to plug?
actually, I'm in Kyabram on the weekend.
Really? Doing a gig?
A bit of laughter on Saturday night and preaching Sunday morning. This is for the Anglican,
fantastic.
The Anglican parish.
Busting out any new material or just the old gear with smoke bombs?
It's a new town. It's the old material.
Fantastic.
It's as the Lord leads. Yeah.
And what about you, Jane?
So many gigs.
Really?
Oh, so many gigs. How much time have we got? On Grand Final Eve over at the Oakley Bolo.
Yeah.
With JVG and the Guitar Method and Billy Miller from the Ferrets.
Oh, he is great.
We are seeing it in. Yeah. It's a bit of poetry, a bit of a sizzle, a few songs.
There's nothing that Billy Miller cannot do. Tony Wilson, I think we've actually helped people over the course of the show tonight. I wish I could say it was on tomorrow, but I can't. The nightlife with Tony Delroy is imminent after the news here at 774.
Sam, take the Brownlow.